Hey, everybody. It's episode 340 of PodQuest.
Hey.
It's Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. I am Chris. With me is Walnut.
Hello.
Druten.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
I'm doing all right.
You know what? I went for a walk at lunch. I'm having a decent day.
It's a nice day out to go for a walk.
It was a beautiful day. Yeah. I brought the dog out. It was nice.
It was fucking spring today.
Yeah, it was like only like 56 degrees out, but I wanted to open my window so bad.
I mean, that's pushing it.
That's nice weather in my opinion. I'm not cold. Like,
neither am I, but like 56 is just like that point where like you could get away with it for a little while, but it is going to make your house just a little cooler.
Yeah.
Whereas like if it was maybe like 60 is like that sweet spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was so nice out.
Yeah, because even when we took the dogs just before dinner, like, it was super nice out. Like, there were people down, like, playing basketball and playing in the park and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The weather is turned. I think it's supposed to be in, like, the 50s the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's supposed to rain this weekend, but it's not supposed to go below 40.
Which I'm fine with that. Like, it can rain and wash away the rest of this fucking snow and ice.
Yeah, I agreed.
I love snow, but I am tired of the snow.
Yeah, same here. I like the snow, but I like it when it's still snow. It's not snow anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's just ice and in the way.
Yeah. So according to Google, highs average out at 50.
Okay, but that's
like,
not bad.
Yeah, we have like today was 58 was the high, but then like the next couple of days like high 40s. But yeah, so it's going to average out about 50 over the next 10 days.
Okay. But yeah, like it's going to be 6 months before like the Wegmans parking lots are clear.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I distinctly remember, like, years ago, and it wasn't, like, one of the blizzard years, the Deptford Mall having piles of snow into, like, June.
Yeah.
Like, not, like, deep into June, but, like, early June, like, some of that snow still had, like there was, like, little mounds of it that still hadn't melted from how they piled it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, like, how slow snow melts. Especially after, like, it's above freezing temperature. You would think it would, like, melt a little bit quicker, but no. Like, it takes forever.
Yeah, especially when it's piled on top of each other like that.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of, like, keeps itself cold because it's just the top layer that's getting the warmth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, like, that top layer then gets melted and then freezes again as it's, like, running into the like, lower parts of it. And just makes it like blocks of dirty ice. It's gross.
It is.
Anyway, though, kind of a busy week this week.
It was a very busy week this week.
First thing up, we have hopefully you guys know anything about this. I put it down specifically for the two of you. Wizards of the Coast is releasing a new D&D book. It's called Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft.
Yeah, so it is a source book, not an adventure book. So it'll have a variety of spells, characters, magic items, things like that. Not, like, adventures, but, like, settings and things like that. It seems to be mostly a DM's book and less of a player's book. But, like, honestly, they release a new book every year. So it's not, like, too special. Like, I literally got Tasha's for Christmas, which came out in November.
So yeah, I guess...
Tasha's was like, also a source book. It was,
But I'd say a little more player focused.
Yeah,
but
it was more an adventurer's guide than it was a DM's book.
And like what I read about this, and like a lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It sounded like maybe they haven't done a horror theme stuff in a long time.
They had the Curse
of Strahd. Or horror focused.
They had the Curse of Strahd, which was an adventurer's book. But, and they actually revamped Curse of Strahd last year because apparently gypsies are, inappropriate or something. I'm not really too sure how that works. People were offended with the way and term they used for gypsies in the original Curse of Strahd, so they revamped it and added some new things to it as well last year. But yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of horror themes in a lot of 5e at least.
Yeah, and I guess, like, I'm not super deep in the lore of D&D, but my understanding is they've kind of been doing a lot of work on bringing back older things that maybe didn't really get touched on much in 4th edition.
Yeah.
Probably. And, like, they brought back Eberron that people would like to see come back. And Ravenloft is, like, a different area in the D&D world outside of the Forgotten Realm, which is
area. Like, when you say, like, a different area, do you mean, like, the difference between, like, Skyrend and Morrowind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Or, you hate Lord of the Rings, I was gonna say, or, like, Middle-earth and the rest of the planet.
Okay, well, I was gonna use the difference between Skyrim and Morrowind, or the difference between, like, Azeroth and Outland in WoW.
Yeah,
where, like,
yeah.
Outland was, like, a different dimension, you went through a portal to get there, whereas Skyrim and Morrowind are just different, like, continents or whatever in the same planet.
It's more the continent.
Yeah. I mean, they're calling it the Demiplane of Dread. I don't know if that is, like, a...
Ravenloft could... I don't 100% know.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that. Like, same as with Drew. I don't know. I make a homebrew world, so I don't know all of the world of D&D.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
But just reading a little bit I read about this, it just... As far as that stuff goes, it just seemed interesting because it sounds like they're trying to pull in, like, Eastern folk horror stuff, like your, like, Japanese and Chinese horror stories, as well as, like, putting, like, fantasy spins on, like, the more modern stuff, which I assume would be, like, the ghosts and haunted things you get in, like, the Conjuring films and Sinister and stuff like that.
Yeah, like,
I don't know for sure if that's what they mean. That was just the wording of the article at IGN.
Like, as weird as it may sound to say, it seems like they're leaning a lot more on the supernatural in this book.
Well, I think that is the, like, key defining element of Ravenloft. Like, is that it's the more supernatural versus the, like, high fantasy area. Whereas, and then, like, Eberron is, like, the steampunk area of D&D.
Because, like, there's a class in, I think it's Tasha's. It might be a ranger. But it might also be the other one that I have, that it's called the Monster Hunter, but they focus on hunting, like, the supernatural creatures. But I've never seen any storylines of anybody going through those things. And there's no major storyline. So, like, that class kind of isn't all too purposeful in my experience of playing D&D.
Well, here's
the
new stuff for that class.
Yeah, which... makes that class more worthwhile.
Or at least more interesting to do.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's kind of the same thing in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But okay, yeah, I didn't really know if that was like a big deal or not. It sounded like the other thing, the Curse of Strahd, was like older or something. Because they very specifically in the article, which I believe was just the wording from Wizards of the Coast, was it's not meant to be like a Curse of Strahd 1.5.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be its own unique thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause, like, Strahd, I'm pretty sure, was the first campaign book written 5th edition. But it was, at that point, it was also a re-release, basically, or, like, an update to 5th edition of an old campaign book from either 2nd or 3rd edition. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes at least some amount of sense.
So, Curse of Strahd, according to the wiki, at least, takes place in Ravenloft.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's
all,
I guess,
makes sense. All
so same setting, but like different story.
So every book that has an adventure attached to it, besides Strahd, takes place on the Forgotten Coast or Forgotten Realm, Forgotten Coast. I can't remember.
Forgotten Realm.
This takes place in Ravenloft.
Well, and then Descent to Avernus
goes to Hell. Yeah.
There's an Eberron book.
Eberron. Well. Yeah. Right. But was Eberron an adventure, or was that just a source?
I think it's a little of both, the Eberron book. I think it's more an adventure that also then included the Artificer and, like, the Warforged and something else.
Well, it had the Warforged. The Artificer was never actually put into it. Artificer's first official appearance is in Tasha's.
Oh, is it? I thought it was in maybe a version of Artificer, but yeah.
Sorry, the dogs are just barking downstairs at something. So I muted myself for a minute there. So what's the difference between an adventure and a source?
Well, so a source book is like your player's handbook, dungeon master's guide, the things that have the rules, and then the adventure books are like, here is a campaign that you play through. Here are the places you go, preset fights, things like that.
Yeah.
So okay.
Yeah, there are DMs that go strictly on like the Adventurers got the Adventurer books. There's the Adventurers League, which goes on those books only and specifically. Like, they don't do homebrew content. That's all pre-made content by Wizards.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess that's kind of like those things that Penny Arcade releases, that they always have like on the Penny Arcade merch at like PAX Unplugged and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I didn't realize that. Like, I knew that there were books that were like pre-made campaigns.
Yeah, that's what those adventure books.
Okay. Okay, that makes a little more sense then.
But like, they won't necessarily take you from level 1 to 20. Some of them are that big, but like Curse of Strahd is, I think, 1 through 10 is where it ends.
A majority of them are generally 1 through 10 or 1 through 5 even.
So like, it's a thing that you would like theoretically string together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
so like you could do this starter set, which has the Lost Mines of Phandalin, and then go into
Horde of the Dragon Queen.
Horde of the Dragon Queen, and then maybe go to what was the one we just did with Eric that we finished?
Storm King's Thunder.
Storm King's Thunder, yeah.
And that would get you to like level 10.
Yeah.
Okay, so like, are they always like the set level? Like, is it always 1 through 10, or would you be able to just like be like, all right, well, you guys are already level 10, so this, we're going to play this as 10 through 20.
Well, I mean,
you could probably make tweaks to
make
it harder for a 10th level character, or you could let them just power through the early shit as way over leveled characters, but make them feel super strong.
Yes.
They kind of would be.
So, like,
and then by the time they get to the end, they probably wouldn't have really leveled up at all because they're fighting things too weak.
They've been fighting trash mobs.
Yeah.
So then it's like they get to the end, and it's like, oh, wait, we're not as strong as we thought we were.
Yeah, but it also depends on how you provide experience and do level ups. If you're like, what is the word? Why am I bad with words today?
It's not just today. It's fine.
I know. but like, if you're providing experience based on like when they get to a certain point or when they do like specific things, like then like you might still give them experience or level ups, but just not as many, or like you said, tweak it. But like even Storm King's Thunder is 1 to 10, so you could do like the starter set or whatever, or Curse of Strahd, and then make new characters and go from 1 to 10 again. It's completely up to you.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Well, the next thing we have on here is the opposite. It's more interesting to me than you guys. So Todd McFarlane announced that he is going to be launching a Spawn universe in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So Spawn has been around since 92 or 93. It was one of like the first books out of Image, if I remember correctly, when all those guys split off to do Image. And it's been running pretty consistently since then. I don't know that it's ever not been published, but they're in the 300s now. I know it had a huge surge in like sales and stuff like that when issue 300 launched last year. So he's looking, after 20 some odd years, to expand that and have more than just the one ongoing Spawn book and make it sort of like a shared universe the way like Marvel or DC or even the other Image imprint of Top Cow does now, where you know Spider-Man can pop up in the Avengers, in this case Spawn can pop up in one of the other Spawn related books. Which that, like, that's kind of neat, because like you don't see some of like the other publishers doing that too often, just because it is sort of a big undertaking and a lot of the smaller publishers don't necessarily have that sort of bandwidth to do it. So what they announced so far is there's going to be a one-shot in June called Spawn's Universe. That's going to set the stage for kind of what's going to come through the rest of the year. And then every other month after that, a new book is going to launch for a total of 3 new books, which will exist alongside the existing Spawn series. And McFarlane said he's not renumbering Spawn. Like, he has no intention of ever renumbering that. Like, that's going to just keep going the way it's going. Like, there's no point in making a new number one every 5 years, which is great because new number ones are fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. The new books, though, are going to be called The Scorched, Gunslinger Spawn, and King Spawn. The only one that I kind of saw any real information about would be The Scorched, which might be like a team book. And then Gunslinger Spawn is apparently going to be about a spawn from like the Old West, but in modern time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I actually don't know much about Spawn. Like, it's one of those books that I never really read. But them kind of like having this one shot in the summer that's going to sort of set up that universe, I might pick it up and start checking it out, because I've always thought that character was neat. While I know the 1998 movie was not necessarily a well received movie, I remember as a 12-year-old thinking it was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think I actually own it on Blu-ray too. I think I found it in like one of those like $3.99 bins at like a Best Buy or a Walmart once and picked it up. Other than that though, they didn't announce any specific teams. Like, odds are like Todd McFarlane is not going to regularly be drawing this. He'll probably do like some covers. He might do like a story in the one shot, depending on like what sort of book that ends up being. But like, that dude makes toys now. Like, he runs companies and he runs a company that prints comic books and a company that fucking makes like detailed action figures. So probably doesn't have time to draw the whole comic.
No.
But some of the people that they named that would be involved in some way, Donny Cates is going to be writing something, which like, he's doing like Venom now. He's doing crossover at Image. Like, the dude's just fucking writing everything, and like, he's good at it. So that's a good thing. They also announced Greg Capullo is going to be involved somehow, which is cool because he's been exclusive to DC since like 2011. I don't know that he's really done anything outside of them. Oh no, he did one other like creator-owned book like 5 years ago between like DC books, but this will be him returning to Spawn, which he wrote or he drew Spawn between 93 and 2000,
mm-hmm.
and then did another stint from 2003 to 2004. If I remember my history correctly, he was the first artist on Spawn after Todd McFarlane stopped drawing it himself.
Okay.
So like, he drew that book for the better part of a decade, so it's kind of cool that even if he's not coming back to like be like a regular artist, if he's just going to be coming in as like a cover here and there. Same thing with some of the other people, like Mark Silvestri, J. Scott Campbell, and a bunch of other people were named, and a lot of the names that were on there were like people that are either definitely working on other books or are more known for their cover work than anything else. Like, Silvestri is one of the owners of Image Comics. He's working on like his own stuff too. So like, I doubt he's going to draw an ongoing Spawn book, but you know, he'll do like a cover. Same, like, Campbell's the same way. Like, that dude does covers for fucking everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, it's a neat thing to be happening.
Yeah, that is pretty neat. Like you said.
And Spawn just has a real cool design.
My only real, experience with Spawn, similar to you, was that movie from whenever. And I loved it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those, I've always wanted to jump into it, but it's one of those, like, I already read so many other books. I don't know if Spawn is, like, a new reader-friendly book either.
Yeah.
Just because it does have so much history to it. Like, Marvel and DC, like, even when their books have 1,000 issues, there's, like, you can easily figure out, like, the best place to jump into it.
Yeah.
For Spawn, I just don't know what that is, but now I do, so.
Nice.
It's a good time to check it out. So, after that Nintendo Direct last week, Nintendo released a demo for a little thing called Project Triangle Strategy, because Square Enix and Nintendo, and I forget the studio name, are just really bad at fucking naming things, apparently.
it's still its project name. They haven't decided a name for this game yet.
Project Octopath Traveler.
Was that what they called it?
Yes.
Okay.
That game was announced on a Direct. I remember, I forget what stream I was watching, but I think it was Kind of Funny. I was watching Kind of Funny, and that name happened. It was like the E3 Direct. That name flashed across the screen after the guys were just like, oh, that looks really cool. And then they both just started laughing uncontrollably at the name. And then lo and behold, like half a year later, it's like, hey, here's the real name. We just dropped the project.
I don't think this game's going to be called Triangle Strategy.
I mean, it fits because it's like the three different countries or whatever,
yeah,
but I hope not, because it is super literal the same way Octopath Traveler was.
Yeah.
Octopath Traveler is at least a better name of a thing. It's dumb, but it's a better name than Triangle Strategy.
Look, your controller doesn't even have a triangle on it. Why are you going to call it Triangle Strategy?
That's true. That is true.
Like, it would make sense if your controller had a triangle, and you hit that as your primary button instead of any others, then sure, call it Triangle Strategy.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is true, but I don't know. I don't... Considering they did it once, I'm not going to say they're not going to do it again. I hope they don't. I hope they come up with a better name that's more... Even if they call it the Salt Iron Wars or something like that. As literal as that is for the fucking story of the game, mm-hmm. at least that is something better.
Yeah. But yeah, it's there's a lot of words being spoken in that game that I don't care to read right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a real weird choice.
Like... I mean, this is one reason why I don't generally like playing RPG demos. Like, I had the same problem with Octopath Traveler. Like, I wanted to see how the game was. I didn't want to play this portion of the game. Like, I didn't like Octopath Traveler's demo because it was like, you got what, two characters to play through their intro story? And I was just like, I don't want to play through their story. I just want to know what the game's going to be like.
So, I actually preferred the way, I mean, I agree with you, like, you don't necessarily want to just play, like, the direct things like that. I like that Octopath was at least the beginning of their stories and not in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Drew and I, like, I think it was in the group chat, so I think you were reading it, Rich. I mentioned that to you, like, the other day, that, you know, it was way too story heavy for a demo mm-hmm. to drop you in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh yeah, there's all this stuff going on. A, I don't want to have to read all this again when the game comes out, if the game comes out in the near term. And if you don't fast forward, it was like 15 minutes of fucking cutscene before you had like that like 10-minute battle. And then I only did the bridge. I don't know if there was anything after that.
Yeah, same. There definitely seemed to be stuff after that, but I was like, I got enough.
Well, I started to read what they were talking when they were talking, and I, like after about 5 minutes, I'm just like, this is too much, and I fast forwarded it. And there was another place that you could go to besides the bridge battle that was more fucking story.
I wonder if that's the same thing you could go to after it, too.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, now, like...
Did either of you actually read any of the story, or did you just skip it like I did?
I can't say I retained any of the information from it.
I tried, but because I don't know anything that's going on, because it's chapter 6, I believe, is where they threw you in. Like, it's so political that I don't know. I didn't understand any of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I will say, the art style is very similar to Octopath, and it's a very good art style. Like, the hand-painted backgrounds with, like, the sprite characters. Like, it is both modern and retro, and I do like that a lot.
Yeah, I thought it looked really pretty.
And, like, the battle system... Honestly, it was a little convoluted because they threw you in like you said, in the middle of the game. You have a bunch of characters that you don't know how they play individually. Like, you don't know what their defense is, what their attack is, what their attacks are.
Yeah.
You don't know how weaknesses and stuff like that work. Like, if it's like a Fire Emblem game, like, if you've played other Fire Emblems, you know that, like, flying characters, like on horses or dragons, are weak to, like, archers.
Yeah.
So if they're in range of an archer, they're probably going to get one shot.
Yeah. And like, I had, because there's two casters on your team. There's, like, a healer and then, like, a magical caster. I
think there's actually three. There was a healer, a fire caster, and an ice caster.
So yeah. The fire caster, I never had the ability to cast their actual damaging spell, because it was always grayed out anytime I got to try to use it.
Okay, so
go ahead.
Did you figure that out, Drew? Did you figure out how it worked?
I eventually did. Did it explain that to you, or did I, like, because I don't remember it being explained, and
I was gonna say the same
thing.
I don't remember it being explained either. It doesn't mean it didn't, because I was trying to avoid reading too much of the text, because, like, it's in the middle of the fucking game. Like, I just wanted to get a feel for the game.
The story beat it starts on is a fucking, like, kind of major spoiler, it would seem, but...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
It did not explain how to use that ability. Like, the only thing I can think of is you had to take a turn to not use an ability with that character in yes. order to be able to use that other ability because of the two yep. squares.
So at you least can use the abilities.
That's how I figured out how to do it.
Yeah, you basically, if an ability has the little diamond square thing next to it, it needs that many of those. So, like, some abilities had two, some had one. I didn't see anything higher than that. But some just, like, basic attacks don't have any.
Yeah.
So you can do those attacks and you're fine. But every turn it builds up one of those triangle or the diamond.
No. If you I'm pretty sure if you did a basic attack, it didn't add any more diamond. Like you had to not do anything to gain a second one.
That's possible. Yeah. Cause I never had that, the fire user within range of anybody to do a regular attack. But I definitely, like, ran out of the ability to use the attack and then, like, had the ability to do it again.
Which, that's an interesting system, but in a battle like the bridge, that you're just being bombarded with enemies and your goal is to get to the middle of the bridge, I need to be able to kill some shit. And I hated wasting my turn. I was like, do I really have to waste a turn with this guy to be able to cast his damaging spell? That's kind of bull.
Well, you might not have to waste a turn necessarily, like, because it's dropped us into the middle, like I was saying before, we really don't know how the builds of characters work. We don't know what sort of mechanics there are in fights to kind of, like, do different things, or what sort of customization there is for characters. Like,
yeah.
Is it like a Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics where there's, like, job systems where the person that's a caster doesn't always have to be a caster?
Yeah. And it's... looking like it's more like Fire Emblem, where every character has their set class.
At least, Fire Emblem, you can change classes.
Could you? Maybe yeah. Older Fire Emblems then. Older Fire Emblems you couldn't. The newest one you could.
I mean, the last four Fire Emblems you could.
All right, well then, the DS one. That's the only one I've ever played.
That, Awakening?
I don't remember. It was forever
I think
ago.
that was the DS one. That's where Crom came from.
I don't remember. It was so long ago. But
that one you could change classes to.
I just don't remember.
I was always under the assumption that in Fire Emblem the characters were the characters.
Like maybe your heroes could change classes, but because it was always unit based.
From at least Awakening on, which was the DS one,
the GameCube
you
one.
Could change it.
The GameCube one.
Radiant Dawn.
I guess
that might be. I never played the GameCube one, but. Yeah, like, from the DS version on, which was Awakening, all characters could change. When you got to, like, when you max out a class's level, you could then basically prestige them. And it would take you back down to one, but you'd be at, like, the advanced class. But you could also... There were certain characters that it didn't make sense to change their classes. Like, your player character and Crom in Awakening, like, you leave them as what they are and then put them into the advanced one. But then once you max out those two things at their max level too, then you start jumping around because there's no more progression at that point. But everyone else, you can just kind of, I think you needed an item to do it at certain times, and not all characters could be all classes, but you could just change classes as you needed to.
Okay.
So just to hit on this again, because we mentioned it a little bit before we started recording, Rich, you failed the bridge mission.
Yeah, I failed it. Because because of so many words being thrown at you, and, like, there's a guest class, or a guest character in that mission, that for the first three rounds did fucking nothing, and just stood
there. Yeah,
it
doesn't attack until the guys come from behind.
Yeah, and just stood there. Like, honestly, I thought, like, oh, I can't control that character, that's the character I have to defend. I didn't realize that they're, like, defend the character on the horse, and...
Well, they say the character's name... But they don't necessarily tell you which character that is, which I, when you've been playing it for however many hours it takes to get there, you'll know what character is. But you actually, I moved my cursor over every character to look at their names so that I knew who I had to protect.
Yeah. And so also like I, because the character you're trying to defend is on a horse has further movement range, they were constantly out of range of my healer. And so they took three hits and died. So I lost the mission. I was like, all right, well, I got basically the main point of the combat system, kind of. I'm not going to understand it any better by playing this over and over until I actually get the game. Which,
yeah,
I had fun playing it. It's just there's too much to really fully grasp it that I'll probably get it, depending on when it's released and money and everything during the time of its release.
Now, Drew, considering you are the biggest tactics fan here, what did you think of it?
I'm definitely interested. I hope there's a more robust job system, which is like, because that's kind of the big thing about Final Fantasy Tactics, how customizable the characters really are. But also, it's a super big political story, so that part of this demo intrigued me for sure, while it making no sense to have put the demo in that spot in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a definite right there.
But, you know, it plays like a tactics game, so I'll definitely have it on my radar, but I'll want to know more about the classes before definitely picking it up or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it had a lot of feeling like Fire Emblems do too, like at least my modern Fire Emblems, where if characters are near each other and also near an enemy, like they team up to attack. It's been so long since I played Tactics. I don't remember. I don't think Tactics ever did that, though.
Nope, it definitely did not.
I didn't think so, but it's been... When did War of the Lions come out? Like, 2007?
Is it that new?
It was PSP. So, yeah. Between 06 and 08, it has to be the window. Because it wasn't a launch PSP title, I know that much.
That's true.
But I like that's the last time I played Final Fantasy Tactics, so... But yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. Like, I'm definitely intrigued by it. I'm glad it has a story, because I complained about that last week when we talked about the Direct, about Octopath had no story. Like, there was no hook to actually keep you going back to it, unless you wanted to just follow that one singular character that kind of, like, struck a chord with you. But, like, you might have had to go through 8 characters before you found that character.
Yeah.
But this one, at least, you know, it seems to have, like, a big fleshed-out world and political strife, and I like the tactics battle systems.
Yeah.
Anything else either of you want to say about it?
No, it's interesting. Check out the demo. Maybe you can pass the bridge.
I did. So did Drew.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I tried it a second time, I'm sure I would have.
It didn't take that long either. Once I kind of like got the hang of like what the characters could do, I just ignored the guys that came from behind and just moved right into the bridge.
Yeah, and that's the thing about that mission. That's all you have to do is get onto the bridge.
You have to get onto the bridge and clear any enemies off the bridge. Yeah. So. The people that spawn on the bridge have to get cleared out, and if anyone gets onto it before you clear them out, you have to get rid of them too.
Okay.
But yeah, cool. Less cool. EA and BioWare have officially ended development on Anthem 2.0, or Anthem Next, as it was being called. This just came out today, actually. What was that, like 2 hours ago that we saw it?
Something like that.
I find it funny that like they stated that the pandemic is one of the root causes of this. But no, it's just you had a broken fucking game that you don't know how to fix. Just admit it.
I mean, I think them quitting on the game is them admitting.
Yeah. And look, I am sure, like, somewhere along the line, like, the pandemic did put a hurdle on it, because trying to rebuild a game that was that bad while nobody is working in the same place is definitely a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you had a bunch of people that were, not a bunch of people, but like Corey Hudson and I forget who else left. And I don't know if they were involved with Anthem, but like the director of the game left in the middle of last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, like that's also going to hurt the overall vision, I'm sure. Even if like the team and whoever was taking over knew exactly what was going on, like, even if that doesn't hurt the team, like, I'm sure that hurts the people at EA that actually give them the money to make the game from having, like, any faith in it. Because they're like, oh, well, the guy that, like, thought it was going to be a great game just fucking bailed on us. So maybe it's not going to be a great game after all. But yeah, so Christian Daly, the head of BioWare Austin, is the one that said, like, it was done and the pandemic impacted it and all that stuff. It was like 2 weeks ago, though, that the reports came out that EA was making a final decision on the fate of Anthem. So they didn't wait too long to tell everyone, at least, which, funny enough, I doubt either of you saw it, because it was one of those random, like, Google ad thing, or not Google ads, but, like, Google News notifications from somewhere basically going, like, it's a little worrying that it's been radio silent on Anthem since EA said they were making a decision on what they were going to do with it.
Yeah.
But it looks like BioWare is going to instead be refocusing on their upcoming stuff in Dragon Age and Mass Effect, and then continued support on Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO.
Which makes sense. Dragon Age always sells. Mass Effect needs some work, but this new one, hell, it's like a direct sequel to the fourth or the third, should do pretty good. And so, people still play The Old Republic, and they're making money on that thing. So it just, it makes sense to refocus and honestly give up on Anthem.
So this is a real question, not like a snarky one. Does Dragon Age sell?
I would assume it does, but I really don't
so,
know.
I remember Dragon Age Origin, the first one, had a lot of, like, presence. Like, people were excited for it, they talked about it, I'm sure that one sold well. I don't remember hearing people talk a ton about Dragon Age 2, and I feel like that one was kind of disappointing to the fans. I never played it, and then I just don't know how Inquisition did. Like, I know there was, people were excited as it was leading up to coming out, but then it seemed to, like, fizzle very quickly after that. But that was also, like, what, 6 years ago now? So, it's been a while.
So, Inquisition came out, well, I forget when it came out, but it was apparently BioWare's best-selling game.
No, Inquisition was 2014, actually. Worldwide release November 14th. Sequel. Yeah, released November 2014.
Oh, you know what? I picked it. I got it in 2015, then.
Yeah.
Was it a launch title?
Wait,
when did PS4 and Xbox come out? Was it 2013 or 2014? Now I can't remember.
Because it was seven between generations, right?
I'm double checking because I normally know this stuff and I'm just drawing a complete fucking blank. Yeah. It was launched in 2013. So it was within the first year of it being out, it came out. But yeah, and then I got that and something else right around the same time in like early 2015 and didn't like it very much.
So according to Wiki, Dragon Age 2 sold more than 1 million copies in less than 2 weeks following its March 8th launch. Which was faster than Dragon Age 1, and by May of that year had sold over 2 million copies.
Okay.
So yeah.
They do sell then. I honestly wasn't sure, because I always hear the hype leading up to them, but in my memory, like, I don't remember hearing people really talk about them after they launched.
Like, I talk about how Dragon Age sells. I haven't played Inquisition, and I didn't play Origins. I really liked Dragon Age 2. I wanted to get Inquisition, I just never got around to it.
So, like, Dragon Age 2 is almost, across the board, the least well-liked of the three.
I thought that was the case. Didn't they change how, like,
yeah,
something major, like, about how it played or something?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Origins was more of, like, a Baldur's Gate-style combat system, where, yeah, like, combat would start, you would choose the round would happen, and then, like, I think there was an auto play feature from that point on, but you could also choose it, whereas Dragon Age 2 was more of like an action-y style.
And yeah, which is also kind of how Inquisition was.
I believe Inquisition was like a better combination of the two. I'm not sure though.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. I think Inquisition might have been similar, a little more similar to like a modernized Knights of the Old Republic,
mm-hmm,
where like you would auto-attack if you were like within range to auto-attack, but then you could like freeze everything to like select specific abilities. Again, yeah, it was 6 years ago that I played this. I honestly don't know if I'm getting that right.
No, you're right. You are.
Okay. Cool. Did you play it, Drew?
Yeah, not a whole lot, but I did play a decent amount of it.
Okay.
Let's see. According to the Wiki, the action-oriented system, and this is for Inquisitions, follows the player in a typical over-the-shoulder third-person style. Players can access the tactics menu to modify the behaviors of the AI companions during combat. The player can also access tactical view, which allows them to pause the game, assign locations and orders to party members, and then resume the game to see it played out. So, like, it was, you could do both. Whichever one suited your preferred playstyle is what you could go with.
Which is also more how Origins was.
Yeah.
But Inquisition had the camera moved in and was a little faster. Yeah. From what I remember of playing Origins.
Origins, the combat was very slow. What I liked about 2 was, like, you could still do, like, the assigning and pause the game and assign each thing. But, like, I kind of have a one-track mind when it comes to some games and some battle systems that, like, I'm focusing on the person I'm choosing. And if you're not reminding me to select another player, I'm not going to.
Yeah, totally.
So that's why, like, I really dug the Dragon Age 2 system, but, like,
That's why I didn't like games like Final Fantasy XII. Like, just don't give me a fucking party. Just let me just be one character. Forget having multiple characters.
Pretty much. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, to circle back to Anthem real quick. The Anthem servers will continue to be available. They're just not going to do anything else with them.
I honestly thought they were already shut down, but that, I mean, it's nice that they're going to keep them up for a little bit longer.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So I found out that I had a bunch of Best Buy credit, like reward points.
Mm-hmm.
Like a stupid amount of reward points. So I bought a game, and then I bought a PSN card, because apparently you can use those gift certificates to buy PSN cards if you buy them online.
Okay.
Or the app was just broken and let me do something it wasn't supposed to. Because I remember trying to do that in store once and it would not let me.
Wait, did you buy it with the Best Buy reward points or with a gift card? Because I think
Best Buy reward
points. I think the reward points you can use for anything.
I was told the one time I tried to do in store that I couldn't do it with the reward points. So maybe it was just the store being stupid. I don't know. It let me do it though. I got two games that I shouldn't have gotten. Let's be realistic. One of them, I ended up getting Avengers with the PSN credit because it was half off.
Nice.
I have not touched it yet. I probably won't touch it until the PS5 version comes out,
which I think is like in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Really, the only thing that kind of pushed me towards a little bit more is because I'm actually interested in the Future Imperfect stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, quick question for you before I talk about what I actually played. Does that game have difficulty settings?
I don't remember. The missions do. You can.
Okay.
I mean, they're easy. It's.
No, I know they are, but we talked about this before when it came out. I thought the combat was atrocious. It was the worst part about the game to me. I'm interested in the story. If I can, I'm going to set it to just whatever the easiest setting is and just fucking run through that shitty combat to see the story.
I'm sure there is a way. Like, each mission you could set to, like, a difficulty. So I'm sure there's, like, a difficulty setting in general.
Well, even if it's just per mission, like, that's fine. Like, I'll change it for every mission.
I mean, it starts on the easiest difficulty setting per mission of your setting. So, like, if there is a way to change your difficulty, you would have to change it before you start playing.
Okay, yeah, which isn't a big deal. Like, I was just curious ahead of time. Like, I'll look to see what all the settings are when I get around to it. But so the game that I actually ended up buying, because I fucking hate myself, was Persona 5 Striker.
Yeah.
Boy, that combat is fucking boring, but also a little more involved than I expected from a Musou. Because it's got just the normal hack and slash, like you either hit X or Y. X does your normal attack, Y does like a more powerful attack.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's Persona, they also included a bunch of Persona stuff into it. So holding different combinations of like the shoulder buttons will give you different like abilities. So like if you hold, I think it's L. So it's on, I got it on Switch. So I'm just trying to remember the buttons on here. If you hold L and then hit R, you will target an enemy and fire your gun like you would in like the base game.
Mm-hmm.
Cause the gun was just a thing you could fire. If you hold, I want to say it's RZ or however, the R2. If you hold R2 on the Switch, you will then pull out your persona. You can cycle through any personas you've acquired and use like their special abilities.
Yeah.
So like you can pull out like a fire persona to cast like fire spells or a healing persona to heal yourself or your party members. But like the thing that I actually like about it is it really is just a continuation of Persona 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I played maybe 2 hours of it, if that, so far. Because I just picked it up yesterday evening. It's a whole bunch of just, like, Persona 5, like, story stuff for the first 2 hours. Which is really what all I wanted. Like, I'm fine not really having the combat because the combat's boring. But getting to just, like, see these characters again and see them interact again is exciting. And it was actually kind of touching because at the end of Persona 5, like, your main character goes back to wherever he's from. Because he just got kicked out of his house because they thought he assaulted some dude who was trying to rape somebody.
Yeah.
Because fuck kids, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But he moves to Tokyo to like go to school for a year. and like made all these friends. And it's him coming back to Tokyo for summer break to see like all the friends and like the guy he was staying with and everything like that. And like everyone was excited to see everybody and the dude that owns the cafe that he stays at was, like, super nice to him. And that guy, you know, early on in the original game, that guy was kind of a dick. But it was just, it was like catching up with people almost. Especially after spending 100+ hours in the base game.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to see what those characters are doing now, because half of them are, like, third year seniors in high school. A couple of them are in college. One of them, I think she'd be, like, a sophomore or a junior.
Yeah.
At this point. So it's just, you know, that part of it's cool. And, like, it's got the same Persona aesthetic, running through, like, the dungeons or whatever you want to call them. Outside of just kind of the repetitive combat is still neat, because there's a lot of stuff to explore. They almost made it more of, and maybe Age of Calamity was similar to this too. I played the last Musou game I played at all was I tried a little bit of the original Hyrule Warriors,
mm-hmm.
and found it just really just super boring.
The original Hyrule Warriors was very like straightforward.
Like it was very much just a basic ass Musou game. Like it was just here's a bunch of enemies, go kill these enemies.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas like Age of Calamity had that, but like each map and mission was like kind of its own like open world type thing that like had a bunch of collectibles and things that you could explore and get, and a bunch of like side objectives that you didn't have to actually do.
Okay. Yeah, so this one definitely feels more like they took Persona and they made it an action RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the combat is big hordes of enemies instead of just like a handful of sort of more powerful enemies.
Yeah.
So, like, rather than it being more like a Jedi Fallen Order or, like, what's another, like, third-party, like, action game? Third-person action game. Like a Devil May Cry or something like that?
Yeah.
Because, like, you kind of move around like that. Like, you're very quick. You can, you have a jump and, like, a dodge ability. You have an ability where if there are things above you that you can jump onto, like a light post or, like a floating shelf or something like that, you can jump up onto it and get away from the enemies. And then if the enemies then congregate underneath of you, you can do like a spin attack that'll damage them all a whole bunch.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they wanted to make an action RPG, but because they had to make it a Musou, they had to just make it just waves of tons of enemies with very little skill needed to defeat them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to just see more of the story. Apparently, like, the little bit that I read about it, they, like, travel all over Japan. You get to see all the characters from the first game again, so...
Yeah.
Even, like, the side characters that weren't part of the Phantom Thieves.
Nice. So, that's, yeah. Persona 5 is potentially the next game I'm gonna play, depending on what I decide to do over this weekend.
I mean, it's... The base game... So, I know it's free on the mm-hmm. PlayStation Collection, right?
Yeah, which is why I have it.
Yeah. The base game is really good. The little bit I ended up playing of Royal so far, there are a lot of really good quality of life improvements to that game, aside from just the additional story content.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like, I don't know. The base game is free, so it's like, why not play that version?
It's like, I want to play it, but right now, with Monster Hunter coming out on the 23rd, I'm, like, because it's such a long game, I don't know if... Basically, it depends on if I start it this weekend or not. I'll probably play it and try to have it beat before months.
I mean, honestly, a month to get through that game, it's about 100 hours to get through it without doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to get through all of the dungeons.
Yeah.
There are some, like, non-spoiler, like, guides that just kind of help you plan out the days between dungeons to make the game, like, flow better. It's almost worth using one of those just so you're not stuck in a position where, like, you literally can't progress anything because your skill level's not high enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because those guys are like, all right, well, the dungeon is due on June 2nd. So on May 30th, go do the dungeon. Everything before that, like, do this, 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 and this. Like, work on these skills, work on these party members, stuff like that. Because otherwise, like, you might get to, like, November and not be able to proceed because your, like, diligence is too low or something fucking stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, it's, my gameplay schedule has changed a lot lately, so I don't really play a lot of games during the week that much. So, which is why I'm like, alright, well, if I start this weekend, then I should be able to beat it before Monster Hunter. But we'll see.
I don't know, if you're only playing on the weekends, unless you're doing like 20-hour days playing the game, I don't think you'd beat it by the time Monster Hunter came out.
And that's why, like, I'm 50-50.
I'd save it for later. We'll like, see. Definitely play at some point, but, like, there's a bunch of other games on that thing that you haven't played yet, I imagine.
Yeah, there's...
Did you ever play Ratchet & Clank?
I have not played Ratchet & Clank, no.
Dude, play Ratchet & Clank. That game's really good.
I know.
You don't know. You never played it.
I've watched Eric play all of them.
Really?
Yeah, because he played them all, and it would be in the main living room, and he would hog the systems. He would get done his homework first, or get home from work before I would, and I wouldn't be able to play games, so I just would sit there and watch him play games.
That's fair.
Joys of having an older brother.
Yeah. The new one is worth checking out, though, especially because it's free.
Yeah.
Free is almost always... I mean, you can also check out Days Gone. I think that's on there, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, you can run from those zombie hordes.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
You don't sound too excited.
That game just wasn't that great, and so I'm just not...
Some people really like it.
Some people really like Monster Hunter, Cobb, so...
Well, that's what I mean. Richie really likes Monster Hunter. Other people really like Days Gone. It might be a match made in heaven.
No, like, I'm not... From what I've seen of Days Gone, it had a cool concept. I was super down and interested with it before it was released, and then after it was released, I'm just like... I don't really know, like, this just kind of goes too far.
No, I'm right there with you. It's almost more survival than anything else. Like, you have to, like, manage your gas on your bike and stuff.
Which, yeah. Like, I'm all down for a survival game, but, like, I'd have to try. Like, I remember playing, like, this is a poor, poor example because it was a bad game, but the Daryl game for The Walking Dead, and, like, that was one thing you had to worry about was your gas. And, but in that one, you didn't actually drive your car. You would just have to go from destination to destination. And if you ran out of gas, it would just be like, all right, go find gas. And you'd have a quick side mission to go find gas. That was a bad game. Oh my God. I can't believe I still own it.
Wait, you own that Walking Dead game?
Yeah, the Daryl game. I own it for 360. I mean, I bought it and I even reviewed it for the website. And I think I straight up bought it just to review it for the website. And I think I bought it and reviewed it for the website because I knew it was going to be bad. And I'm like, we need bad reviews on the website.
Well, there you go. So Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 Plus 2 is getting a next-gen upgrade.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be coming out. It's going to be coming to PS5 and the Xbox Series X and S on March 26th. There's going to be a Switch version that's not an upgrade coming sometime later this year. Mm-hmm. The upgrade's going to include 120 frames 1080 mode and a 60 frames 4K mode. It's also going to have spatial audio and some other upgrades, but it's going to look smoother or look better is basically the two things that are important there. Mm-hmm. So all the wording, including the wording on their fucking support page at Activision, is very poor on this and doesn't actually say the pricing. But it looks like if you bought the digital deluxe version of 1 Plus 2 when it came out for PS4, it's a free upgrade for this.
Uh-huh.
If you bought any other version of it, it's $10 to upgrade.
Well, I'm pretty sure the digital deluxe version on Xbox is also...
Well, that's what I mean. Like, just in general. Like, digital deluxe versions across the board are free upgrade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's only PS5 physical editions can be upgraded. Xbox cannot. The difference between the two consoles. Mm-hmm. I believe it is $10 if you have the base game to upgrade to the digital deluxe. So you're basically just paying for the digital deluxe upgrade to get the new version of the game. Mm-hmm. They didn't definitively say who was working on it, though. So we don't know if it's Vicarious Visions or just somebody else got it. And we don't know if there's ever going to be any additional DLC or, like, inclusion of the other games. Because everyone wants 3 and 4. Like,
yeah.
That's what people want. Give the people what they want.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Drew, are you going to pay $10 to get the upgrade?
Yeah, because I would like to see something running at 120 frames.
And you know what? You have the TV that'll probably look real nice on.
Yeah. And it can run at 120, so...
I feel like a $10 upgrade fee for a game that was not meant to be, to have an upgrade, that's a fair price to pay.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that it wasn't meant to have the upgrade, because it did come out in September, so it was close enough to launch that this could have been like a back burner thing the whole time.
True.
But it wasn't a full price game. It was a $40 game.
Yeah, I'll still have not even paid a full price normal full price for a game I played tons of.
I mean, I think I also played $10 to be able to play Black Flag on my PS4 back when it was PS3 to PS4. It was a $10 upgrade, and I was like, yeah, sure. And then never played it on my PS4.
I remember you doing that too.
I had already beaten it on the PS3, and it was like, all right, but like I paid the extra $10 or something. I don't remember. I don't know why I did that.
So a couple other little tidbits about this that I actually didn't put in here. You will be able to transfer your saved games. The support site for Activision for this has like the steps for it. I didn't read through all of them, but there were enough steps there that it looked a little convoluted. Which wouldn't surprise me, because it seems like in a lot of cases these like save upgrades seem to be a disaster for these companies. The park creator stuff though will not transfer. So okay. If like you made parks on the PS4 version, they apparently will not be playable on the PS5 version.
Glad I didn't touch that at all.
I mean, same here. But even then, like honestly, like those games are fun enough that even if the save data didn't necessarily come over, like I wouldn't mind having to play through those levels again.
Yeah.
Because like honestly, I think the only level that I really don't like playing is Venice. Like there are some other levels that aren't as fun as others. Like everyone hates Downhill Jam. I do not hate Downhill Jam nearly as much as I fucking hate Venice.
I don't know. I think Downhill Jam and the mall kind of stuff.
I mean, yes. Like the two downhill kind of like race to the bottom levels are not the best. But I feel like Venice is just it's a confusing layout. Finding the stupid fucking bum to ollie over him is a nightmare.
Fair.
And yeah, just like if you mess up, and honestly, all of the tasks in Venice are kind of shitty. Just it's a very open space, but it's also everything looks the same. And because it's just beach surrounding you, it's kind of hard to like pick like a reference point on where to go. So like you have like the do the three or five gaps or whatever it is, ollie the bum. Like there's just grinding that random fucking ledge that's in like the back corner of the fucking level. Like that place sucks. Fuck that whole place. So Rich, you finished Resident Evil 7 and the DLC.
Yes. Incorrect on one point. I did not play one of the DLCs because I honestly don't care about it. And I'll get into that when I get to the point of DLCs. But I did. I beat Resident Evil 7. I think, I basically played pretty much all of it in almost one sitting. I know I started it at some point last week and then played it on Sunday and beat it Sunday. It got better. It got better from, like, the initial point. Like, weapons and ammo and healing and, like, items in general became more, like, common to find. That, like, it became, like, kind of an easier game in a way. Like, not that it was harder to begin with, but it's just, like, I'm not a fan of not having anything in my games. If you're gonna give me an inventory space, but not give me any items or anything to defend myself. Like, the beginning part of the game right before the garage fight, you're literally just running away from the father. Like, and I'm like, this is not how Resident Evil should be. Like, I should have a way to defend myself. I should have an actual way to get out. But it wasn't that bad the further you got into it. And after the initial house and killing the father for the second time, it got a lot better. And you weren't really sneaking around anymore. The overall story for the game was interesting. I thought it was going to end at one point, and I was going to be really mad if it did, because like it explained nothing. But then like it was like, oh no, there's actually another 2.5 hours left of this game. I was like, oh okay, sweet.
Wow, that's actually a lot.
So it was the game. I think was about 8 hours. And at about the 6 hour part for me, or maybe 6.5 hours, you escape the house area. So there's like the house, then there's like the old house, I think it was called. And then there's, the greenhouse. And then there's like the final location before you leave the whole like land, like the whole Baker, estate area. And once you get out of there, you actually, and this is something that I hated, you had to make a choice on who to save. There were two people to save. It was either your wife or this girl Zoe that was helping you the entire time by giving them a serum to like free them from the infection of the mold.
Does it actually make a difference, though, who you save?
Barely, but yes. If you, depending on who you save, you'll have a different outcome during the next section, and you'll have a slightly different ending. But there is a legitimate ending, and I didn't get that legitimate ending because I saved the wrong person.
I take it you're supposed to save the wife?
You're supposed to save the wife, but, like, my rationale was, A, I haven't seen you in 3 years. B...
Or the girlfriend, right? Not the wife.
It actually... Everyone online is saying they're husband and wife, but I thought, like, at the beginning, they had mentioned, like, boyfriend-girlfriend. I can't fully remember. But everyone online is saying husband and wife. So I'm assuming it's wife. Or at least maybe at the beginning they were boyfriend and girlfriend in the game, but in the next one they're husband and wife with a baby, apparently, because Capcom has released all that information for some reason. But,
Oh, so I guess when you beat this game, she is cured.
So you're supposed to cure her and get off the estate lands with her, and leave Zoe back. But if you heal Zoe, or cure Zoe, and get off the estate lands, you're like, we'll be back for you, we just need to get help and find a way to cure you. Zoe just, like, curing her does nothing, because she still dies via the mold. Which, to me, I was like, why would you even give me this choice, if it doesn't matter?
Yeah, that is kind of shitty.
And the next section, like, you're piloting your boat on the water. You see this large tanker that has no right to be in a bayou because there's water's nowhere near deep enough to have it in there. And you get stopped. Zoe dies. You get knocked out, and then you magically come to at the tanker as Mia, the wife, which, like, makes no sense. Why not just make it so that I save Mia? It made no sense as to why Mia was there. She just, like, you leave her. The last thing you see is she is on the docks, and you travel for, like, an hour or more, who knows, and then Mia's just there with you. It was kind of disjointed and dumb, and by not saving her, she ends up dying in the tanker, and so the end sequence, she's supposed to have been able to escape from the tanker, if you did save her, the end sequence, she would be laying on the helicopter. With this one, he sees his phone, watches the video of her, and then throws it off. And it's like, I just got over losing her, and now I lost her again or something. It was dumb. But, I thought it was stupid to force that choice when it didn't matter.
Yeah, that does seem kind of stupid.
But, like, overall, the idea, like, there is an organization named the Connections that is working on bioweapons. And turned this little girl into a bioweapon who can then control whoever she infects with mold, basically. And she saw Mia as her mom because Mia, the reason Mia went away and disappeared was she was working for the Connection, to bring the little girl, Evelyn, somewhere away from people so that, like, she doesn't infect people. And it was just like, so, Evelyn saw Mia as her mom and, like, had this weird connection, ended up crashing the tanker that they were using in a bayou somehow. I really don't understand that part either. And the both of them were found by the Baker family, where then Evelyn makes all of them infected, and that's why they go batshit crazy. They're actually good people. They just were crazy because of this infection. I'm trying to think, what else? Overall, like, story was interesting. It was cool. It's the normal Resident Evil. Find files, read them, get the full story. This one had the videotapes that were to help you. There was one videotape that I never found that I wish I should have, or that I should have, because there is a puzzle. It's called the birthday room puzzle, where you have to put a candle on a birthday cake. And in order to do that, you have to, like, grab a bunch of items, and it's an escape room, essentially, and find out where to put the items in the right spot. But the actual solve of the puzzle, like, the initial solve of the puzzle, is releasing gasoline into a room that's going to explode from this cake and catch you on fire and kill you. It catches you on fire and kills you. The only way to get, like, the solve is to get a little, toy, winder, I can't think of the word right now, but like, you know how like you would wind, like a wind up toy, you would get the little screw to put in to wind up the toy. But in order to get that, you need to take it out of this drum of oil, which then starts pouring oil and gasoline all over the place. But once you fail that the first time, you don't have to do the rest of that. You just go and use the same password and solve it.
Oh, that's kind of sucky.
And so, like, the puzzle is made for you to fail the first time and then just use the answer that you got the first time to solve it properly the second time. But there's also a videotape that you have to go through the puzzle with somebody else that if you do that, you would understand the solve and you wouldn't have to go through everything else. And I was just like, this is kind of dumb because I didn't find that videotape. And when you die from the puzzle, you're still alive. When you come back, you're in that room of the puzzle. So you can't, like, go back and find the videotape to get the real answer or whatever. So, like, Ethan just knew the answer in this puzzle in my playthrough, basically.
Which is very convenient.
Yeah, it's just very convenient that he knew the answer. So it's just, like, little silly things like that that just, like, kind of made it a little disconnected. And then just the whole final boss fight was, like, kind of lame. It's not an action game, so it's cool that they didn't make you, like, be super action-y with it, but you're, like, the first phase of fighting Evelyn is she's just releasing waves of energy, and you have to block through it and walk up to her and get her with a syringe to weaken the mold that's in her, kill the mold that's in her, and basically kill her. Which then you find out she's the old lady that's been sneaking around all over the place. And then it's her head that you just gotta shoot a bunch of times and she breaks the house. And then it's her head again that you have to shoot a bunch more times and you're like you fell to the ground and you're just aiming up shooting it. It was just a boring final boss fight.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
But like, it was good. It was fun. It was like kinda spooky and kinda like tense, but like overall, like I probably won't play it again. But I'm glad I played it the first time.
And was the DLC any good?
The DLC that I played was Not a Hero, which was the Chris Redfield. And he comes in at the very end of the game. He works for the BSAA, like in all the others. And they're using Umbrella Blue helicopter, which Umbrella Blue is a new umbrella corporation that works to fight biological weapons. Because Umbrella... And I did a huge deep dive. I watched a 2.5 hour video on YouTube. I was working while watching it. About all of Resident Evil. And it explains, like, Umbrella goes under, they lose all their funding, and then they become, like, a recovery and protection organization and not a pharmaceutical organization like they used to be. And that's where Umbrella Blue, it's a blue logo, comes out. And they just defend the world from biological weapons. But his storyline is he's going after the son of the Bakers, Lucas, who you did not end up killing during the playthrough as Ethan. And like, it was okay, but I don't know. It was just fine. It didn't really add too much to it. It was go kill him, and you killed him. And like you didn't really learn too much new. And then the last DLC, which I didn't play, and I'm probably not going to, is called End of Zoe, which is the character I ended up saving, who ended up dying. She's found a few months later on the Baker Estate by her uncle, which the Baker Estate is walled and fenced in, so I don't know how her uncle even gets in there, because it's protected and defended by Umbrella Blue. But she's found by her uncle, who then somehow learns of... and like cure to her state because she's all crystallized. And you just run around as an old man punching monsters. Like he doesn't get guns, you just use his fists and punch things. And the last item you get is like a super fist from Umbrella that like you punch things harder. And when I learned that and just learned what the storyline is, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care about that character enough to have to play through that.
That's fair.
One of the funny things when you're playing through Chris's story, and Chris ever since Resident Evil 5 has been just overpowered. If you were to shoot one of the molded, which is like the zombie things in this one, and stagger them, and then walk up to them and hit the shoot button without aiming down sights, he will go up and punch the head off the molded. So you can essentially kill, you can kill every molded with one shot. you shoot them in the head, you walk up, you punch their head off. And I was just like, this is Chris, who killed a boulder in Resident Evil 5. So, yeah, this makes sense, I guess. But yeah, so that's my take on Resident Evil 7. It was good. The DLCs were fine. I honestly don't know if I'm going to get Resident Evil 8 right away, because I wasn't 100% thrilled with this, and it just, like, I don't really know. I don't know. I love the Resident Evil series. I love the whole lore behind it, but, like, I mean, let's just talk about the name of the terrorist organization that Mia was working for, the Connections. Like, you couldn't have come up with something better than the Connections, really.
Now, I feel like you're just being nitpicky.
Has writing ever been the strong suit in the Resident Evil games?
It has, though. Like, I mean, it has. Writing has been good in Resident Evil.
No, I think the lore is good. The writing is not. But, like, it's got really cool lore and like, interesting world building.
Yeah.
The overall, like, names of things and dialogue and all, not good.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, playing that and beating it and learning of Umbrella Blue, which I've never heard of before this one, brought me down into a hole of, like I said, like, looking up Resident Evil lore. And I watched a 2-hour and 15-minute YouTube video on this Resident Evil lore. And guess what I learned about Resident Evil? This is a super secret thing, by the way, that I was telling you guys about. Guess what I learned?
What?
Okay.
It's called Biohazard in Japan.
No, no, no. Even better. I need you guys, do me a favor, pull out your phone, or open up Bing or Google or whatever, and Google, or just search Biohazard the Stage. I'll give you a second. Have you searched it yet?
Okay.
It's a friggin' canon Resident Evil play.
Yeah, that makes sense. They do stage stuff for a lot of stuff in Japan. Okay. There's a Naruto stage play.
There's a Naruto stage play. There's also a Bleach stage rock opera, which the next thing I'm going to tell you is look up Biohazard Voice of Gaia, which is a friggin' Resident Evil musical.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me. This is your super secret thing, though?
Yeah, I did not know that there were not one, not two, but four plays from Resident Evil.
You're right, I am disappointed in you. This could have just... just because you made this its own number on the outline, rather than just like a tick underneath of the RE7 one.
But
Bad form.
I still thought it was ridiculous when I found this out. I was like, wait, there's plays? And all three of them, or three of the four are canon, essentially. But like two of the ones that are canon, like one takes place just like way in the future, and that's the musical. And then there's one called Biohazard the Experience, which is just like its own little thing in the Resident Evil universe. I thought that was nuts. I was like, there's fucking...
That is, it's weird. It's very Japanese, though.
Yeah. It blew my mind. And, so it's the Biohazard the Stage, Biohazard Voice of Gaia, and Biohazard the Experience. There's also Bioroids Year Zero, which I can't find online, but, at least the stage and the experience, I found on YouTube and may watch those at some point.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Mia. Well, we are going a little long, and there's a lot of show left.
Look, can I just pop in a quick thing that I forgot to put on the list?
Yeah, go ahead.
I got the Platinum in Control.
You told us that.
Yeah, you told us that 2 weeks ago.
Did I?
Yeah.
Was I on the show after I got the Platinum in Control?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you told us about it. We talked about it.
We did? Because yeah. I thought yeah. we just talked about it in the group chat.
No, it was...
No, you talked about it on the show.
It was the same week that I Platinumed... Maneater.
Oh. I swore I didn't talk about that on the show.
Yeah, no, yeah, you definitely did.
Because I thought that happened last weekend, and then I didn't.
Nope. No, you talked about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Time still means nothing in 2021.
This is true.
So, a bunch of Sony stuff happened. In a blog post, their senior VP of platform planning and management, Hideki Nishino, revealed that they are working on a PSVR for the PS5, so like a PSVR 2, if mm-hmm. you will. The new headset is supposed to enhance resolution, field of view, tracking, and input. It's going to be a single cable connecting it to the console. I'm assuming it'll be USB-C. Like, that makes the most sense, because there's one right on the front of the console.
Yeah.
But that wasn't actually specified. They're also working on a new controller for it, so they're not going to bring the moves up for a third generation.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah. So the new controllers, they said, is going to incorporate some key features of the DualSense, and will focus on ergonomics. So I'm thinking they're probably going to try and do something similar to what like Valve or Oculus have done with like the more articulate hand controls. Maybe not as articulate, obviously, but just something that kind of like molds to your hand a little bit better and gives you like better control options in games.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming also that they're going to incorporate the adaptive triggers and the fancy rumble, because frankly, like adaptive triggers in VR would be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to like pull something, like having it be harder to pick up or something because it's heavy or stuck or whatever, and having the triggers actually respond to it that way. Or like they have said when it comes to the DualSense, you know, if it's like a bow and arrow, having like the triggers actually like have resistance while you're pulling it back and stuff like that. And just like the VR is, or I'm sorry, the rumble feature in the controller, like we talked about it before, but it's crazy. Like when you do the little zipper thing on the fucking suits in Astrobot, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels like you're actually zipping something up. The other thing is this headset's not going to launch this year. No date was given, but definitely not this year.
Not surprised at all.
Yeah. Sony Interactive Entertainment CEO Jim Ryan also did an interview with GQ UK, and they brought it up during the interview. He said that they didn't have a name for it yet. He was asked what changed, and I have the quotes directly from the interview. So when he was asked what had changed between the headsets, he said, "So this will be a completely new VR format for PS5. PlayStation has considered VR as a strategic opportunity and a big innovation story. We think there are two themes that you're going to see. Us capturing the technological progress that has taken place since the present VR system came to market, and a considerable amount of lessons learned. Because the present system was our first one, changes will be things like moving to a very easy single cord setup, setup with this one, and many other similar learnings. Dev kits are apparently about to go out." So there's that. And then when he was asked why make a follow-up to the PSVR, he responded with, "We believe in VR and have been extremely happy with the results with the present PlayStation VR, and think that we will do good business with our new VR system for PlayStation 5. More importantly, we see it as something beyond this coming iteration that really could be, really big and really important. We like to innovate. We think our community likes us to innovate. I'd turn around the question and say, why not? For us, it's a very logical step to take. We're very excited by it, and we think the people who are going to make VR games for our new VR system are going to be very excited too." So like, not a lot of like actual info there, but I thought that stuff was just interesting because it sounds like a very different idea of VR compared to what what Jim Ryan said in October about VR, where he said VR was not a core area they were focusing on. His comment, so he did an interview with the Washington Post back in late October of 2020, right before the PS5 came out. And he said, "I think we're more than a few minutes from the future of VR. PlayStation believes in VR, Sony believes in VR, and we definitely believe at some point in the future, VR will represent a meaningful component of interactive entertainment. Will it be this year? No. Will it be next year? No. But will it come at some stage? We believe that." Which, I don't know about you guys, but like that sounds like we're not thinking about VR in the near term. And now, less than 6 months later, they're like, "Oh no, like VR is important. Like we're definitely going to keep focusing on VR."
Well, I mean, also he said, "Is it coming this year? No. Did it come in 2020? No. Is it coming in 2020 next year? No. It's not coming out in 2021. Is it coming in the future? Yes." I don't know. He was pretty accurate about what he said.
I mean, yes, he did not lie in there, but just the way that old interview reads, it just seems like he's a little more dismissive of PSVR than kind of like all in for it, especially when it was Sony in general, like when being asked about like PSVR on PS5, like for people to just be able to use their existing headset, they seem to have like thought about it second, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Whereas, like, sure, maybe if they had said, like, hey, we're working on a new headset for the PS5, so, like, your old headset's just not going to work as well on it. That would have been different. But instead, it just came very much like, VR's not all that important to us. Like, it didn't really... It sold well, but we never really had the games for it. Like, the software sales never really took off, so...
I mean, VR is... It's still a... Like, how do I word this? It's still kind of a very niche thing. Not a lot of people like it. Not a lot of people have it. But it is... Like he said, it is definitely going to be some sort of future gaming service. Like, it's not something that's before its time like some of the other, like motion controls were with the Wii. Like, there is a place for it now, but it's not their core focus. Their core focus was to get out a system, a good system. That's what they did. Now that their new system is out and everyone loves it and it's becoming hopefully more available. I don't really know. I haven't paid attention to stocking of the system.
No is the answer on that.
Time to focus on something else. You know what? People like VR. Let's go for it.
Yeah. And to be fair, like the PlayStation VR, like all reports, it sold really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there weren't really many like notable games for it. Like they were kind of few and far between. All the notable games in VR were PC only because the PSVR just couldn't do what the Valve and Oculus headsets could do, especially as they kept iterating on them and releasing like new versions, new controllers, and all that.
And the PS4 couldn't do what the PC that had specs to be able to run VR could.
Yeah, that I mean that was kind of a given, but
yeah.
I see what you're saying with reading out his statement from October, but like. I feel like he's more so saying like, I mean, it's not our top priority, and like VR right now is not for the commoner, and for us to focus on that at this point in time would probably be a bad idea. But we'll get there.
I mean, he did literally say in the future VR will represent a meaningful component of interactive.
Yeah.
Like he didn't completely dismiss VR. I kind of agree with Richie on like their focus was not on VR at that moment. It was get this fucking box out the door.
Yeah.
And then see from there. And so, yes, like the PSVR is the highest selling VR headset. It sold like 5 million when considering there were like 120 million PS4s. Like not even 5% of PS4 owners bought one.
Yeah.
But I mean, compared to like how many people have Vives.
Right. But still, like.
But like, what do you need in order to buy to play a Vive or other VR headset?
A $1,200 computer.
Exactly, exactly.
But I'm curious how the Oculus Quest is doing, since that doesn't need anything.
Yeah, and I feel like that one is probably close to a PSVR as far as like usability, like with the type of games it can handle. Like, it's definitely better than, like, the Google Cardboard ones where it was just your phone in a fucking cardboard headset.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess we will see what happens with PSVR. I still, like, I mentioned to you guys, I put it in here. I feel like part of them wanting to push, like, a new headset out had to do with the demand that they saw for the adapter for the PSVR for PS5. Like, I feel like if they had gotten no requests for that thing, we might not be seeing a new headset this like talked about this soon.
Yeah, totally possible.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know.
I can definitely see a tie.
Yeah, yeah. So other PlayStation related stuff. Days Gone is going to be the first in a wave of first party titles heading to PC. It's been confirmed to launch this spring.
Nice.
So that's kind of neat. Horizon Zero Dawn was the first exclusive title to go. That launched in August, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, August. They haven't said what other games would be coming. But in that same GQ UK interview that Ryan did, this whole thing was touched on, and in his answer, he mentioned like the first party cycle in the later half of the year being as strong, in the later half of the PS4 life cycle being as strong as it was, like your God of War, your Horizon, like all those games that were kind of like in the second half of that console generation. The ability to expose those games to a wider audience, and the fact that the cost of games keeps increasing, which, or the cost of making games keeps increasing, which I read that as, by putting it on another platform that isn't a direct competitor to them, they're able to make more money because the game costs more money to make, which is obviously why they would do this, right?
Yeah.
In the GQ article, though, he didn't mention Days Gone directly, but apparently that write-up actually does include it, like, after the fact. But IGN got confirmation from Sony that Days Gone is launching in spring. And yeah, there's no other word on what other games might be coming. I know a lot of people have been hoping and speculating that Bloodborne might come to PC, because people really want a Bloodborne PS5 upgrade and a Bloodborne on PC.
I would be so surprised if they did a Bloodborne PS5 upgrade, because that game is so old.
That's why people want it, though. They want 60 frame,
yeah,
like 4K,
yeah,
like locked or better.
Yeah.
Because people still love that fucking game.
It was a great...
Go ahead, Richie.
I was just going to say, it was a great game, and I've been wanting to get the DLC to play that stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say, people love the From Software games. All of them.
I mean, that was my first From Software game that I ever played, and I loved... Like, I hated it the first time I played it, and then a month and a half later, I jumped back into it, and I dug it. I was like, I understood it, and I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, we talked about it before. I just could not get into that game.
Yeah.
What else was there on here? Anything else? Oh, the only thing I was curious about, like, reading in this, do you think it's likely that they ever put their big stuff on there? Like, their Spider-Mans, their God of Wars, any, like, the Naughty Dog games? The stuff that are, for more or less, are their system sellers.
Spider-Man, I don't know, because of licensed shit. Like, I really... just legitimately don't know, even if they could, if they wanted, because it's not a property they own, and I don't know what their deal with Marvel for that.
Do you think
is.
Disney's going to turn down money?
No, but
you're probably
also
right,
like, I don't know that for the existing ones that whether or not they could, whatever,
yeah, no,
their deal
you're right
is
there.
Written, that hey, it might be for PlayStation console, and if they then put it out on PC, that could fuck up whatever deal. Like, that's kind of the dumb shit that happens. Licensing?
Yeah, no, and a lot of times, like, the way those things are written, it might be that way, and
yeah,
it might not be, like, an issue between either company, but by doing it, it might void the contract and cause them issues for making the sequels. Mm-hmm. Not because either company doesn't want to do it, just because their lawyers then won't let them.
Right, exactly.
Or some D-bag executive won't let them because of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what about, like, the other, like your God of War or your, like, the Naughty Dog games, like The Last of Us or like, an Uncharted or something like that?
I don't think so. Like, not, if they do, it'll be down the line, maybe before the next one comes out, just to push people to buy that one so that they can try to push people to get the console to get the...
I kind of agree.
It's like what they're doing with Ratchet and Clank. Like, Ratchet and Clank is free in March, which has been free... twice now, once on the PS4, once on the PlayStation Classics on the PS5, and now free again on the PS4, just because the new Ratchet & Clank is coming out. They're pushing people to get this so that they can push the sales of the new one. So, if they're going to do this PC drop of certain first party games, it's like, all right, well, we'll wait a year or two after the game comes out, release these, and remind people, you can get God of War 2 on the PlayStation 5 by our goddamn console.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems likely, I mean, if nothing else.
That's kind of what they've been doing.
Yeah.
But, so, I guess to that point, then, it only that way could I see, like, God of War or to PC. There wouldn't ever be a day and date.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I don't think, even not that they're older, but even these games like Days Gone that doesn't have that big established franchise to go with it. Mm-hmm. Like, that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, even Final Fantasy 16, which isn't even a first party title, has a launch exclusive for PS5 and then PC, nothing else. But PC won't, like, their information for that was like, will come out for PC. Didn't give a date or how long.
I mean, that will probably launch around the same time on PC. That's Sony paying Square Enix a bunch of money to get it exclusively. It it's the same thing that both companies have done with Activision over the years, paying for Call of Duty multiplayer exclusivity, like, for X periods of time, or Sony paying Bungie or Activision or whoever for, what's that thing, Destiny exclusive content?
Yeah, they're the extra maps and raids from Destiny.
Yeah, console launch exclusive is really just a fancy way of saying, our company threw more money at this game than the other company did.
Yeah.
Last little bit of Sony-related stuff. Tomorrow there's going to be a State of Play. So we'll talk about that obviously next week, but I just wanted to mention it. It's going to be at 5 o'clock Eastern time, and from what they announced, it's going to be deep dives into 10 games. So it's like 10 games that we know exist already on PS4 and PS5. Announcements of new games, and then checking in on third-party and indie titles that were announced in last June's State of Play that haven't released yet. So it sounds like it's probably going to be a hefty one. It will still probably be devoid of any kind of life or character, but that's just what we've come to expect from these Sony things.
Yeah.
But yeah, so next week we'll have that to talk about. And then, Richie, you played Concrete Genie, the PS Plus game from this past month, right?
Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to play it after when I first, like, downloaded it. But then I, like, looked into it and remembered that I was super interested in the game when they premiered it however many E3s ago or whatever. That's a fun game. It's quick, actually. I beat it. It's like 6-7 hours, not even. And it's one of the other reasons why I decided to play it after I beat Resident Evil. I've been playing some kind of dark games with The Forest and Resident Evil, and I'm just like, I need something a little less dark and just, like, freeing and fun and colorful. And this was definitely a good choice. It was fun. The art style, especially for the characters, is freaking awesome. It looks like claymation, kind of. Like, look up the character art for Concrete Genie. It looks really cool. And just, like, the sceneries and the backgrounds and everything are really, really interesting. And what it is you play as this kid named Ash, who finds a magic paintbrush. And he's sort of a loner, loves art, and he's bullied by a group of kids who live in this town called Densky. And the town has basically been abandoned because of an incident that happened a couple years back, and now, like, these stupid asshole teenagers that bully Ash pretty much run the town and just use it as their own playground. So Ash finds the paintbrush, and he can, like, paint different things called genies on walls, and they come to life. And, like, you just do, like, random objectives. The goal is to make the town more colorful and bring it back to the beauty that it once was. And as you're playing, you find out more about the bullies and how horrible their lives were. Like, one of the kids, one of their parents is in jail. The other kid, their parents split up and they took their twins. Another kid, the parents fight and argue all the time or something. Like, they just have bad home lives, and you learn this and, like, start to develop a, well, like, I kind of understand why you're a dick, but you don't deserve to be a dick. Kind of, like, feelings toward in this game. And then the crazy thing, and I don't like when games do this, but, like, gameplay and pacing changes, like, 4 hours in to something completely different for, like, those last couple of hours, which was really cool. You end up having to, like, fight some of the genies that you make. They somehow, spoiler alert, somehow turn bad. And you end up having to fight them, and so you get your controls change, and you're pressing square, triangle, and circle to, like, attack them and use different abilities from the paintbrush. It's really cool what they did with that. But, like, the whole, like, beginning part of the game, the first 4 or 5 hours, you're just painting and using, like, pre-made, like, different templates to paint on the walls and make different dioramas and things like that. It was really cool. And like I said, the art is freaking fantastic in this game.
Yeah, that game looks really neat. I don't know if I'll ever get around to playing it, but just the visualness of it looked super nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And like I said, it's a quick game, and there's, like, a free paint mode that you can go to each of the areas and just paint and design anything that you want throughout the areas, which is cool. It is a nice, fun, light game. And it starts out kind of dull and dreary, but it becomes very colorful with the painting that you do. And after you beat it, you unlock a big room underneath the lighthouse that you can just paint whatever you want all around this large room. It was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Real quick, fuck you. I did not talk about getting the platinum in Control on the show.
Really?
I got it last Sunday, like not the one that just passed, but the week before. And then I didn't record last week.
Holy shit, really? I feel like you did talk about it. Did we talk about it that much in the chat?
You talked about having beaten
Control. I hadn't beat Control on the show the last time I was on the show. I'd played like 3 hours the last time I was on the show. And then I played like 18 more hours of it that next weekend.
Wow. It really does. Like, I remember you talking about it, but like, I feel like you actually talked about it. I didn't just read. Text.
I guess you will read text in people's voice. So
fucking maybe.
I mean, I kind of read in people's voices when I know what their voice sound like. But just real quick, that game's fucking awesome. I don't want to say too much about it because, like, saying too much about that game kind of gives a lot of that what was cool about that game away. But like, it was a pretty easy platinum. And, like, I only have 4 Platinums, and 3 of them, the other 3 were Borderlands 1, Rocket League, and Astro's Playroom. So 2 of those are, like, not even anything. Like, the Rocket League and Astro's Playroom Platinum, nothing.
I mean, you had to drive a lot to get that Rocket League one.
You do, but...
Which is basically just, you have to play a lot of fucking Rocket League.
Mm-hmm. But, and I probably would have gotten the Platinum in Control sooner had I kept up with the board countermeasures while actually playing through the game. But I hadn't looked at the trophies really until, like, the end. And I was like, oh shit, I have almost all the trophies in this. I guess I'll figure out what these handful of other trophies are and get the Platinum. And one of them is do 25 board countermeasures. And I'm like, fuck, I should have kept up with these while playing the game.
Whoops.
Because a lot of them are go kill either just an X number of enemies or a certain type of enemy or kill an X number with a certain gun. And like now when you're trying to go back, you're like relying on random encounters to happen, basically. And it's just way harder to get some of those because you wind up having to fast travel just like back and forth. But at least the loads are real fast, so it's not that bad. But I probably wasted 3 hours just trying to grind that trophy.
Which is a lot, but...
Yeah, well, it was like almost 10% of... More than 10% of the time I played that game, really.
Jesus.
When it took me 21 hours to get the platinum. And I legit probably spent at least 3 hours just like, alright, I need to do countermeasures, fast travel, back and forth. And you can only have 3 active at a time, so it's not like... I can just have like 7 or 8 going and be bouncing to 5 or 6 different locations to try to get them done. I might have 3 all in one area and have to leave that area, wait a little bit, come back and hope there's a thing going.
Oh, okay. Ugh.
But super weird, super spooky, X-Files and Twin Peaks vibes all over the place in that game. It's real fucking cool. Like, Cobb, you should go back and play more of that. Like, you should finish that game.
Honestly, like, the only thing that's kind of stopping me, like, I was going to actually start playing it, like, 2 weeks ago or whatever, but apparently the upgrade thing really doesn't transfer your save. It seems like, I think the only way it would work on Xbox is if I download it onto, if I download the Ultimate Edition onto my Xbox One and download my save, start a game on Xbox One Ultimate Edition, and then upload the save and start it again on the Xbox Series X. And, like, I'm just enough into that game that I just don't want to replay that whole beginning again right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I will go back to it eventually, but knowing that I have to play, like, the first, like, 2.5-3 hours over again, it's like, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, no, totally. And honestly, Richie, like, you would really like that game. It's fucking real cool.
Yeah, that's on my list of games to play. One of the reasons why I don't know if I'm going to start Persona 5 this weekend.
I mean, honestly, like between that
be
and
able
a few
to
others,
beat Control in a weekend. Like, if you are trying to finish something else in between now and Monster Hunter coming out, like, you'll definitely finish Control.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I would, as much as I love Persona 5, I would definitely say fucking play, like, Control and some of those other, like, PlayStation Plus collection stuff that you haven't played before Persona 5, like, to fill that gap, because Persona is such a long, dense game, like, you're going to end up getting halfway into it, getting sidetracked by something else, starting Monster Hunter, and then either never going back to it or going back to it so far from now that with the way you play games, you'll just end up starting it over.
I would definitely probably just end up
And like it that's too much game to start over, yeah, if you didn't like play it all the way through. And between Control, Ratchet and Clank, and whatever else is on that collection, like, there's a lot of gold games on that collection that are worth playing.
Yeah.
Especially in, like, the time frame that you're looking to play it in. Like, a month of weekends, basically.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said, I gotta figure... I might just take time off of games for the next couple of weeks and focus on watching stuff, because I'm behind on watching things.
Fuck, well, watching stuff. Playing things is so much better.
Well, that's true. You are completely behind on all the CW stuff at this point.
Yeah, I'm,
Oh, one super quick last thing on Control. Play on the frame rate mode. Don't play on the performance or the graphics mode. The 60 frames, it's so much better.
Nah, frames don't matter. I was going to say something and I forget what it is.
The CW shows?
No, not that necessarily. Oh, yeah. Rich, because I know you do this all the time. Now's probably a good time for you to do your My Hero rewatches, because the new season starts in March.
Yeah, I have to do that.
Because you like rewatch all of the seasons before the new season airs, right?
Yes, I do. But yeah. I watch it English dubbed, because I've already seen it in Japanese, and the first three seasons I've seen already, or all of them I've seen already, but some of them I've seen twice or three times.
Four times, because this will be season 5, I think.
I didn't start until season 2, so I've seen one and two twice now. Maybe I didn't start until midway through season 3. I can't fully remember. But I know I've seen season 1 and 2 in full at least twice. But season 3 and 4 maybe once or twice. Like, once for 4.
Yeah, because that was the last season to come out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I forget when in March the new season starts, but it starts in March.
Yeah, so I have to do that. I'm halfway through season 6 of Supernatural, and then there's a bunch of stuff on Netflix that I've been wanting to watch, like, both series-wise and movie-wise, that, like, I kind of just want to, like, have, like, a chill week or two and just watch a bunch of shit.
Yeah, and honestly, I'll talk about it a little bit later, but Superman and Lois was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Like, good in a way that it is different from what I expected it to be.
But, yeah, and we'll explain more of that when we get to it, and why I didn't watch it. But there's a ton of other news still, kind of.
Yeah, so this will probably be quick-ish. BlizzCon Online 2021 happens. I don't know. It's a thing. It was a thing that went on.
BlizzCon Line is what.
Is that what they're calling it?
BlizzCon Line, yes.
I fucking hate it. I'm going to keep calling it BlizzCon Digital or something. That's stupid. Anyway, WoW Classic, which I forgot was a thing, is going to get the it's going to the Outlands. It's going to get the Burning Crusade DLC or expansion.
So their WoW vanilla is no longer vanilla.
No, but like it's still vanilla-ish, like the Pokemon. You figure as long as they don't remake Cataclysm, everything up to Cataclysm, it's still vanilla Azeroth. So it was after Cataclysm is where like the maps drastically changed. Low-level dungeons change, like, Van Cleef was no longer the villain of the Dead Mines, it was Van Cleef's daughter or some shit like that.
Yeah, but, like, wasn't the point of this to, like, not even have skill points? Because if I remember correctly, WoW Vanilla didn't have skill.
Yeah, it did.
Like, the tiers, the three tiers.
No,
that
it always
wasn't
did.
Introduced until, like, later, or, I don't know, I can't.
It was early in it, because I had a very odd build for a Warlock, pre-Burning Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I played my Warlock more like a mage, and it worked really well.
Yeah, well, I knew it was before Burning Crusade, but, like, it wasn't at launch.
I mean, it was damn close to launch, because I got that game right around launch.
Yeah.
But, like, Burning Crusade, like, it was still pretty vanilla at that point. Like, it had some of the quality of life stuff, and apparently they are including a few more quality of life things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it expanded the world a little bit. It gave you the new classes that the player has, the new areas, the whole Outlands. Flying mounts were a thing at that point, but not in Azeroth yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you could do the looking for group and, like, teleport right to a dungeon. You didn't have to, like, actually run to the dungeon. And, like, stupid stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Burning Crusade was kind of, like, peak WoW. Like, it was super popular, vanilla, and then Burning Crusade came out, and, like, that was, like, its peak. And then it's kind of just been chasing that high ever since.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know. Like I said, that kind of defeats the purpose of WoW Classic.
I mean, Burning Crusade is still classic. It is more than a decade old. Like, it came out in 2007. But they also said that they would be willing to look into doing the Wrath of the Lich King expansion too, if that's what the community wants. But like I said, if they go anywhere beyond Wrath of the Lich King, it's no longer classic. Like, then you're just in the same Azeroth. There's just not a big fucking sword in the world. Because I think there's a sword in the world now.
I don't know. I stopped after Burning Crusade.
I mean, I played a little bit of Lich King and even less of Cataclysm. And I've, like, looked at it a few times since then. Bless you, whoever sneezed.
Thank you.
But I think the Azeroth United, whatever came before the current one, where, like, the Horde and Alliance were actually teamed up, I think, like, the cutscene that they showed at one of the releases was, like, a big sword getting plunged into the planet or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Game's weird. They revealed the Diablo 4 Rogue in a gameplay trailer. How'd that look, Drew? Because I didn't watch it.
It looked pretty cool. It looked more or less like the Bow Amazon or the Demon Hunter from Diablo 3, but also with some interesting looking melee abilities if you wanted to go a melee build.
Okay.
But it's because it's based on the rogue character from Diablo 1, which Diablo 1 didn't have, like, set skill trees like the rest 2 and 3 have had. So
wait, was there not a rogue in Diablo 2?
Nope. There was an Amazon and an Assassin.
I'm thinking of the Assassin.
And then, like, the rogues from Diablo 1 are more or less, like, the Act 1 mercenaries. Like, I'm pretty sure it's the exact same sprite, really, used for them.
All right. And I saw something, I hadn't seen this before. Apparently, Diablo 4 is going to be, like, more open world.
Yeah. I meant to go back and watch the thing where they kind of talk about the open world stuff. But they have mentioned that, and I don't know. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what that looks like. Not sure how I feel about it. Because I think part of what I liked about Diablo was kind of like, it was like segmented. Like, you know, like each act was like a different area.
Yeah.
Speaking of Diablo, though, Diablo 2 Resurrected was officially announced.
That it was.
So it is, in fact, being developed by Blizzard and Vicarious Visions, which is what the rumor was after they got folded into Blizzard. So that's cool. It's going to have improved visual style and quality of life improvement. It's coming to console and PC, which is neat, because Diablo 3 on console actually played really well.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, and I've been interested to play it, but I have 500 hours of characters on PC that I don't want to abandon.
Yeah, I have thought a couple of times about getting it on Switch just to have, like, that sort of, like, pseudo-mindless sort of dungeon crawling to do just on the Switch in handheld, but just never did because there's always something else that I haven't played to get instead. And if I really wanted to, I could probably play that on one of the laptops I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Diablo 3 was not, like, a very demanding game.
My PC can play Diablo.
Yeah, I played it on a laptop in 2012 when it launched, and it wasn't like it was a gaming laptop. I think it was my work laptop. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they talked a little bit about... Oh, and it is expected out in 2021. So hopefully we see it this year.
And the cool thing about it being on both console and PC is it's actually going to have cross-progression, so you can take your characters back and forth version.
Did you see? Is it going to have, like, cross-play?
I don't know. Nothing they said in the separate panel they had mentioned cross-play, but I'd have to go back, and I wasn't super focused on it when I had it on, so I'd have to double-check and see if that actually even got asked.
Yeah, because I would like that. Like, if I could be playing on, like, the Switch or, like, the PlayStation, and you're on PC, and we could be in the same world. Because Diablo is one of those few games where I do actually like playing it with other people. At least other people that I know. Like, fuck random strangers.
Yeah.
But like, I'm obviously not going to get it on PC, and I assume, like, if it will... I assume Diablo 2 is going to play on your PC, Drew. So, I would guess that's where you would get it. You don't think so?
Looking at the specs, mine's below the minimum.
Oh, so you might get it for a console.
I actually might just wind up buying a new between now and when that actually comes out. I mean, I'm probably going to for Diablo 4 anyway, so...
That's fair.
Might be the next thing I just start saving up for. Save, like, $900 by... Because I don't... It was super low-end, but, like, just above where my PC...
Yeah, like, you're not looking to play, like, Cyberpunk on your PC. You just want to be able to play, like, the new Diablo.
I mean, I might... well, like, I would get a PC that could probably run Cyberpunk on, like, media if I really wanted to. But, yeah, I'm not trying to get, like, a $2,500 PC and run everything on Ultra.
Like, you don't need a top-of-the-line NVIDIA card and, like, an i9 processor.
So, like, a $900 to $1,000.
According to Can You Run It, my PC cannot run Diablo 2 Resurrected.
Yeah, but not surprising. Like I said, it's... I want to say the minimum video card was, like, a Radeon 6670 or something.
And I forget what 2 gig NVIDIA GeForce GTX 660 or Radeon HD 7850 for minimum.
Okay, 78. I think I... Or maybe... it was the 78, and I have a 66 or something like that. So
yeah, so, like, it's definitely not, like... a powerful PC that you need for it, but, like, both of you are aged out just enough.
Yeah, like, I have a 1 gig video card.
Yeah, whereas, like, you guys could both probably buy, like, $1,000 laptops with dedicated graphics cards and be able to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can get decent, like, Dells and shit like that now with, like, NVIDIA 2 gig cards in them.
Yeah.
They're, like, nothing super fancy, but, like, they have a dedicated video card.
Yeah, but, I mean, I would buy a fucking...
Oh, yeah, no, I mean...
PC tower.
I wasn't trying to tell you to get a laptop. Yeah. I was just saying you could to play those games. So, the last thing that I have kind of, like, marked down about BlizzCon, they talked a little bit about Overwatch 2. There was so much about it, though, that I'm not going to deep dive. There's still no date for it. So, like, we still have no idea when it's coming out. They did show concepts for new maps in Rome and New York. And a little bit that I did kind of write down here, they're working on like some changes for PvP, and they're looking to include like background abilities or passive roles for the classes. So like the three things that they pointed out would be right now, they're considering them experimental, but a tank passive is currently reduction in knockback and less ult charge generated for those shooting them. Damage passive is a boost in movement speed, and support passive is a slow auto healing effect that would be less effective than what like Mercy can already do.
Interesting.
Yeah. And like it goes on to say that like they are all like experiments they're doing, so like they might not be in the final game, but those are some of the things that they're trying out for the new game. As well as like all the different modes, like the heroes mode, PvP stuff, the story mode stuff, like, they've definitely got a lot going on that they're trying to do with Overwatch. But I feel like that game was announced so long ago, and this is, like, the first time they've mentioned it since then.
Yeah.
They did say that they hope to have more regular information on it soon. So, maybe they'll announce, like even just a release window for it in the next month or two. But I get the feeling if they're considering some of this stuff experimental still, this is still not like a 2021 title.
Oh, if it was a 2021 title.
That is true. That is true. But yeah, so that's sort of the interesting stuff out of BlizzCon. This is sort of like a weird thing. I've been on a little bit of like a Star Wars kick, like outside of the movies at least. So I started going back through the Clone Wars. I think I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. I'm almost done season 3. That show does get a lot better after you get through the first season. It's very hard to follow, though, if like you're just kind of like watching it sort of in the background, for lack of a better word. Like I have it on while I'm working. And, like, I'm paying attention to it, but, like, I'm obviously not, like, watching, like, every single second of it, like with extreme focus. It's all over the place chronologically, though. Like, there are episodes in season 3 that take place before episode 1. Yeah, and it's like, so from what I've gathered, in season 1, so there was the Clone Wars movie that was, like, theatrically released in 2008. Apparently, that was originally supposed to be part of the show. Like, that was supposed to be episodes of the show. That it was, it looked better than they expected, so they made it a feature instead.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they started the cartoon from there. But some of the episodes of the cartoon are actually based before the movie. So the actual airing order, especially in season one, is just all over the place. Like, it's hard to tell if an episode is happening, like, kind of like the movie point for it is Anakin gets Ahsoka as his Padawan. Like, that's what happens in the movie. So, like, anytime you see Anakin with Ahsoka, you know it's after the movie has happened. If those two characters aren't in an episode together, though, it's harder to tell. Because, like, there are episodes, at, like, up in towards season 3 where, like, Obi-Wan and Anakin are on missions. Ahsoka's nowhere to be found, though. So it's like, is this pre the movie? Like, is this happening, like, at the very beginning of the fucking Clone Wars? Or is she just, like, stuck at the Jedi Temple because, like, she had something else to do? But, like, once you get into it, like, season 2 and 3, there are more interesting story arcs, especially around the clones. Like, there's this, I didn't expect as many episodes as there are to focus on the clone, like, the troopers themselves, but, like, there's a two-episode, like, back-to-back story arc where one episode takes place significantly before everything happens, and it's one of the squads of clone troops still, like, on Kamino doing, like, their training, trying to, like, pass their final test to become, like, actual soldiers and go out to war. And, like, that episode ends with them leaving and going to, like, their post. And then one of the first episodes of season one is actually that group at their post and how shit goes kind of sideways, and one of them dies. So you kind of watch this, like, season two or three episode where you see them as a group and you see, like, how they kind of, like, hated each other at the beginning. But then your first time seeing them, they were a tight squad. And then the episode after that is actually them coming back to Kamino to defend it from the Separatists. And Grievous and the fucking Sith lady that I can't remember her name, Ventress. And, like, it was, like, stuff like that's actually kind of cool. Because all you kind of know of the clones from the movies is they kill all the Jedi at one point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, Cody, I think, is the only one. Like, Commander Cody is the one that that Obi-Wan is working with. I think he might be the only one that you really get a name for. But, like, in the show, you find out that, like, they're all actually numbered kind of the way the First Order troopers are.
Yeah.
Like, Finn was, like, FN-2187, I think, right? Maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yes.
Like, they all have just, like, letter number designations, but, like, internally, they kind of give each other names, or, like, nicknames in some cases. But that's also how the Jedi refer to them. Like, the Jedi don't seem to ever refer to them as a number. Like, they treat them, at least the Jedi that you see in the series, treat them like people, not as, like, 100% disposable. And you get to see that, like, a lot of them have, like, different personalities and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you wouldn't necessarily expect for, like, things that are genetic clones of somebody raised exactly the same way as every other one. And there's also just sort of, there's carryover in each one. Like, there are certain clones, especially, like, clones in, like, leadership roles that are, like, always with the same people. Like, Commander Cody is always with Obi-Wan if, like, they're involved in something. And Rex is another one who is predominantly with Anakin when there's stuff going on. So, like, all that stuff's just, it's kind of a cool way to, like, look at that instead. And I also started back up with Fallen Order. I sent you guys that clip where it glitched and when I walked into the ship and it was snowing inside.
Yeah.
But one of the I think I'm actually almost done it. But at one point, you actually have the flashback to Order 66 happening. Like, you see how Cal escaped Order 66. But you're on, like, this ship, and there's a bunch of clone troopers prior to it happening. And I noticed that if you go up and talk to them, they are all voiced by the same guy that voices them in the Clone Wars cartoon, which I thought was actually a pretty cool, like, thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also, Clone Wars apparently got Liam Neeson to voice Qui-Gon in a few episodes, which, other than the movie, all the other characters are voiced by, like, just voice actors, like, not by the people that portray them in the films. I think Jar Jar might be the only one. Like, Ahmed Best may have voiced Jar Jar a few times, but, like, Hayden Christensen wasn't voicing Anakin, Ewan McGregor wasn't voicing Obi-Wan or anything like that. I don't even think they had Frank Oz for Yoda. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, this was, like, a Cartoon Network cartoon. Like, they don't have Frank Oz money.
Yeah.
True.
And like, you saying that makes me want to jump back. You were mentioning how, like, it was disjointed. You do have to remember the first couple of seasons, or, like, the first season and a half or so, it was meant to be just a Cartoon Network show, and then it got a big following, and they actually started to make it, like, actual story. So,
yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, there is actual story between all of them. It's just, you can tell that, you can even just tell that things were aired out of the production order based on the quality of the animation.
Yeah.
Like, there are episodes later in season one that have rougher animation and details that weren't in earlier aired episodes, because those episodes were just made later on when, like, they'd refined the process a bit more.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't hurt the show. It's just one of those things where it makes those early seasons just a little harder to follow, because you're not always sure when things are happening. I looked at, like, a chronological list of the episodes, though. By, like, the end of season three, it kind of, like, stops for the most part. Like, there's a few episodes here and there, but it kind of hits, like, a point where they are all mostly kind of in order from that point on. But so, seeing all this, especially with Clone Wars, I forget if I mentioned this to you guys ever before, but can you imagine if in those prequel movies, Anakin was actually a likable hero? Like, if you watched, I mean, obviously, like, Anakin as a kid is a different story, but episode 2 and 3, if you got to watch episode 2 of him being, like, a likable character, and not, like, the angsty teen who's just always moody and argumentative, but, like, still with some of that, like, rebellious nature that he obviously needs to have to succumb to the dark side, that would have made his fall actually way more impactful. Because, like, when you watch episode, the original movies, like A New Hope or anything, like, Obi-Wan refers to Anakin as an actual good person, like a friend and a hero and all that stuff. But, like, you never actually get to see him be that. He's always just a fucking whiny bitch in the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's constantly miserable. He does everything he can to be wrong about things. And, like, I get it. Like, he's, what, 19, I think? And, you know, definitely had a strange life.
He's a horny teenager who wants to bang.
Yeah, but, like, even outside of that, like, he's not very likable. And if he was likable and you got to watch as, like, you know, that the sand people thing still happens in episode 2. Like, obviously, he still falls in love in episode 2. But, like, less creepy. And then episode 3, you get to watch him just slowly kind of decline into, like, the brainwashing of Palpatine's.
Yeah.
To that point where, like, when he betrays Mace Windu, like, at that confrontation, like, have that actually be impactful. Even though, like, obviously, if you've seen the movies, you know he's Vader. But have it be like, holy shit, I didn't know that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, oh no, Anakin sucks. He ran in this room. There's no way he's not going to kill Mace Windu right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, that's all. I just wanted to mention that about Star Wars. Jedi Fallen Order is super cool. I'm looking forward to finishing it finally. It runs really nice on the PS5 too.
Nice.
Yeah. So, this actually includes a little bit of Star Wars news. Star Wars, the Bad Batch, the next animated series. It's set to premiere on May 4th on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually going to feature Ming-Na Wen as Fennec Shand, the character she plays in The Mandalorian.
I'm happy about that. That's cool.
Yeah,
that was a cool character.
Yeah, and this is supposed to take place after the Clone Wars, but like pre-episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in that like blank period because there's just not much in there yet.
Yeah.
So it's obviously going to be a younger version of that character without the cybernetic implants that she got in Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you guys don't know what the Bad Batch is, it's going to follow a squad of clone troopers that are, they're called the Bad Batch. They're like Squad 99. They're all basically, they're like genetic mutations of the clones, like, but they are mutations or defects that are wanted. Like, they're basically X-Men.
Okay.
Like, they don't have, like, crazy, crazy powers. Like, none of them are, like, shooting fucking laser eyes or controlling the weather. But, like, speed or endurance or, like, better sight, like stuff like that. Like, I think I read, like, one of them has, like, his eyesight is enhanced in such a way that, like, he makes for a very good sniper. Stuff like that. Or, like, super endurance. Like, silly things like that. So that'll be something. I don't honestly don't know much more about it other than that. But they also announced the Loki premiere date. So Loki is going to premiere on June 11th on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know, Rich, mostly you and I kind of like threw out the idea, like wondering if these Marvel shows are going to kind of like run together in any sort of way, meaningful way at least. And this kind of breaks that trend because there's like a 2 month gap, month and a half gap between the end of Winter Falcon and Winter Soldier and start of Loki.
I mean, I personally don't remember thinking that, but going through my head is this sticks with Disney's plan of a new episode every week. Because Falcon and Winter Soldier starts in 3 weeks, which, or no, 2 weeks, right?
It starts on...
It's March 12th. It's Falcon and Winter Soldier.
No, it's the week after, because March 12th is the making of WandaVision.
Yeah, it's March 19th, and then that brings us through April 23rd, where then we have Bad Batch 2 weeks later, so we'll have a Falcon Winter Soldier making of in between there, and then we'll have Bad Batch all the way through until right before June 11th, probably, most likely.
I don't know, that's a very short season then.
I mean, April to June 11th, it's the same amount of episodes as every other show.
Bad Batch premieres on May 4th.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still... My point is it sticks with the one new episode a week, which is what they were going for after their investor call.
Also, it's weird. May 4th is a Tuesday.
Well, and that's...
Oh, May the 4th be with you. Right, you said that before.
Yeah, it goes along, May the 4th be with you, as well as of this moment, Black Widow is set to release on May 7th, which is that Friday. So it probably premieres May 4th, but then from that point on, they release on Friday.
But it would be like 6 or 7 episodes, and I feel like an animated series is going to be longer than that. I could be wrong. It's just like most of their animated, like obviously like Disney Plus doesn't have a lot of animated like originals yet, but most of the time like these animated shows do run longer. So maybe, but I guess that does, even though they're different properties, that does keep a new show at least airing weekly on that platform.
I believe it's only 4 episodes.
That seems very light. IMDb has 2 episodes up. That's stupid.
On Wiki, on their background section, by September 2016, Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, Rising, Step Back, blah, blah. In July 2018, Filoni announced final season Clone Wars would be released, Disney Plus on the season includes 4. Oh, no. Stupid, then.
The second episode is going to air on May 7th. Yeah. So I think you're right there. Like, it is going to be a Friday release. They're just airing the first episode on May 4th.
Yeah.
So they're not even going to wait a full week to air the second episode.
It's not. The 4 episodes was something different.
Yeah. So I don't know. But yeah, at least it does keep new content on the platform, which is good.
Yeah. And that's what they said during their investor call. It's a new episode every week.
Yeah. That is definitely not a bad thing. Where'd the outline go? There it is. So yeah, Loki and Bad Batch are coming. This is another probably quick one. Marvel got the rights back to Punisher and Jessica Jones from Netflix.
Sweet.
So that reverts all of the Netflix shows back to Marvel.
Yeah.
There have been tons of rumors about like those characters showing up in like movies and Disney Plus stuff for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the odds are that like those actual characters show up and it's not just them using the character?
As of right now, not high, but... and there were rumors that Daredevil, or that, what's his name, was going to be Daredevil in Spider-Man. Charlie Cox was going to be Daredevil in Spider-Man. But I don't think it's very likely right now. But maybe, who knows, maybe down the future. It would be nice. They were all, people liked those shows. And they were all great actors and greatly cast, and well casted. That it would make sense just to, like, bring their contracts and keep them.
I mean, I imagine at this point their contracts have expired. And I know some of them are on new, like, different shows and stuff now. Like, Luke Cage is on a show on CBS called Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, the Misty from Luke Cage is a judge on a show on like CBS or ABC.
Yeah.
I see previews for it all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if any of those actors are just actually like readily available, but you're right, like they were well cast and it would be nice to see them continue those. I don't expect them to.
No, probably not.
I definitely expect them to use those characters, just different iterations of them, and to try and make people just forget that the other ones existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today, earlier today, the third Spider-Man movie got an official name. It is Spider-Man No Way Home.
It makes sense based on the end of the last Spider-Man movie. I wonder how long after that this will take place.
Yeah, so along with this, I think it was yesterday or the day before, the three stars of the movie, Tom Holland, Zendaya, and Jacob Batalon, who he's Ned,
mm-hmm.
They shared fake titles on like social media, but they also included screen like shots from the actual movie.
Yeah.
So the three titles they gave: Holland was Spider-Man Phone Home, Zendaya was Spider-Man Home Slice, and Batalon was Spider-Man Home Wrecker.
Yeah.
But all three of the scenes seemed kind of like they were looking at something in all three of them. Something like you could not see in the image. It was either off screen or like on a like computer screen faced away from us. But they looked like they were like in like a warehouse in like hiding or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the images.
I did not. No.
But it makes me wonder if, because Pete's identity was revealed at the end of Far From Home, if he is kind of like on the run and they're just with him. Like if he is hiding, or alternately they ended up in the multiverse because of the all the castings and the rumored castings they've had going on.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not gonna put any rumor or any speculation out of it right now. Like I said, I didn't even see the things, but it's cool that we at least have a title.
Yeah, I mean, No Way Home definitely, like, you can read that two different ways. Is he can't go home because he's been outed, which Doctor Strange being confirmed for the movie, like, Doctor Strange was one of the main people involved in erasing everyone's memory of Pete's identity.
Yeah.
In the comics. So there's that. But also with the multiverse being a thing now, and Pete, and all those other actors confirmed, like, Far From Home could also be, like, a multiversal adventure.
There's one thing. We don't know if their multiverse is confirmed. Yes, we have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, but we don't know to what extents. And even WandaVision, it's not an alternate universe. It's just, like, it's Wanda magic. So
yeah, but if something is called the Multiverse of Madness, that's kind of confirming that a multiverse exists.
We were talking earlier about the Demi... What was it again? All the way up with the D&D thing. The Demiplane of Dread is still in the same planal universe of everything else in D&D. But it's a demiplane of Dread, so, like, yeah.
Planes of existence and multiple universes are different things.
And, I mean, the fact that the multiverse is a known thing in comics and in other properties, like, they basically confirmed that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. became a different universe at one point without, like, outright saying it, by just stopping tying it into anything. It didn't even tie into the fucking Snap.
Look, all I'm saying is, just because we have the Multiverse of Madness that comes out after this movie, doesn't mean we're gonna have, we don't know if we'll necessarily have multiverse stuff in this one.
I mean, you're not wrong about that.
No, it's not guaranteed, yeah. But it's, also when they've confirmed casting of Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx as Electro and Doc Ock, like, those are two big villains to, like, cram into the same movie together and not have it be them from their existing movies, like, reprising those roles.
I mean, yes, but also they could have just casted them again. Like, you never know, is all I'm saying. You never know. Not until we at least get a trailer or something.
Like, I would put money that the multiverse is going to be involved in this.
But
also, I think that Doctor Strange is going to be involved in somehow erasing Pete's secret identity from everybody's mind.
Probably.
Because I feel like having that get outed in his second movie, when he's like a teenager, before they've really even established, like, his actual big bads, just seems crazy.
It's not, like, it would be fine to have him get outed, like, as a teenager, but it's the way he got outed at the end of Far From Home, where it is believed that he killed, what's his name?
Oh, fuck, I forgot about that. That actually makes even more sense to them being on the run in those images. Yeah.
Because it's one thing for him to be outed and just where he, I don't know, I'm not Spider-Man, I don't know what you're talking about. But it's another, like, you killed a guy, or everyone believes he killed a guy.
Yeah, I totally forgot that's how that ended. Yeah. I remember the reveal that, he was Spider-Man, forgot the killing stuff. That makes the whole them appearing to be hiding in a warehouse even more, like, poignant.
Yeah.
Last thing I just wanted to mention. So the title was revealed on social media via, like, a little video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the three actors coming out of a door that has John Watts, the director's name on it.
Yeah.
And talking about how they got they didn't get the real title again. And they basically are making fun of Tom Holland not being able to keep secrets.
Yeah.
But then as they walk by, it zooms in on a whiteboard that has the name written on it.
Mm-hmm.
And around the name, there are a bunch of other, it looks like, potential names.
Yeah.
Which was neat.
I'm sure there's so many Easter eggs in that video because of the office space that they're in that, like, you'd have to comb through it with a fine-tooth comb in order to figure everything.
Oh, yeah. I actually saw somebody on Facebook have, like, one of those, like, Charlie from Always Sunny conspiracy theory fucking things going on for it.
Oh, yeah.
Where Holland has, like, a, it's some sort of math thing on his t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, figured out the math, and he's like, so if you do the math and all this, it equals, like, 54.58 or something like that. And 54, issue 545 was the last issue of One More Day. And if you round that up, it's 546, and 546 was the first issue of Brand New Day, which is where, Pete made the deal with Mephisto to erase his secret identity from everyone's minds. And I'm like, that is a fucking stretch.
You're just gonna be seeing it all over the place.
Yeah. No, you're right. I read that. I'm just like, man, you took a lot of time to figure this out, and this thing only came out like an hour ago.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But with this announcement of the name, they also announced Christmas time for a release.
Oh, was it not already confirmed for Christmas?
I don't remember it being confirmed. Which also then brings to at least according to Nerdist, as of right now, there's four Marvel movies being released this year, with Black Widow on May 7th, Shang-Chi on July 9th, Eternals on November 5th, and Spider-Man No Way Home on, December 17th.
Which, I mean, like we were saying before we started, none of those are actually going to happen.
Who knows?
Maybe Eternals.
Honestly, we'll have to wait and see if they still release it. Like, we live in Jersey where I'm pretty sure movie theaters are still closed, but not every state still has movie
theaters. They've been open for a long time, dog.
Have they?
Yeah, they have, like, limited capacity and stuff like that, and you can rent them fairly cheap.
I honestly, because, like, I mean, I haven't really kept up on it, but, like, movie theaters had been closed for the longest time in New Jersey. Like, they were opened in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia before they reopened them in Jersey. Like,
I actually don't know that that's accurate.
I thought it
they've,
like,
been open for months.
I thought it was still, like, September, October where they were closed.
Nah, they were definitely open by September.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly limited, but, and they still are, but they've been open.
And not all of them were open. Like, there were some that did stay closed. But you can, like, for, like, new releases, you can rent a theater for, I think it's 20 people for, like, $200.
That sounds right.
Which, isn't a bad deal if you know 20 fucking people that want to go see a movie. And, like, frankly, at, like, that, it's a private theater at that point. Like, everyone can sit spaced out. Like, if you know 20 people, like, everyone fucking chips in and, like, you can go see fucking Black Widow.
Oh, okay. It was September that movie theaters reopened.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's a while
six
ago.
6 months ago.
It feels like yesterday still.
I mean, you're not wrong.
So,
what were you going to say, Rich?
No, I honestly don't know what I was going to say.
All right. I watched that documentary movie thing, Console Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the book, also called Console Wars,
mm-hmm.
by Blake Harris. It's unfortunately only available on CBS All Access, which is a really shitty platform.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's bad. There's no app called All Access on the Android store.
Well, you know they're closing All Access next week for Paramount Plus.
Yeah, but it's just going to roll into it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like a rebranding. It's kind of like HBO, whatever it was called before, it became HBO Max.
Yeah. Oh, because I don't have cable, I wanted to watch the Super Bowl, so I signed up for the free trial of CBS All Access. It was down for the first hour of the game.
That sounds about right.
And because I signed up for it, while it was going down, there was like a screw up and it wouldn't take my password. It would tell me I'd have to like actually sign up for it again. I ended up having to call like their help desk, which I was on the phone with them for 45 minutes, and had to re-sign up like 3 times while on the phone with them before it would actually work. But I got a free month because of it.
Which, I mean, hey, that's something. But yeah, like, I looked on the apps on the Play Store, and the only CBS thing that would come up was, like, CBS Live TV. And I'm like, well, that can't fucking be right. I'm not looking for live TV. So I, like, Googled it, and, like, when I Googled it, it came up with an All Access app. Mm-hmm. That's apparently the app for, like, Android television. So if you have an Android TV and you want to install the app, it's actually called fucking All Access.
Yeah.
Like, it's so fucking backwards and annoying.
It's
the live TV app is the one that you want, apparently.
Yeah, it is, because It's if you have CBS All Access, you download the CBS app, and you have all access to live TV and everything else.
Yeah, it's just, I don't like the platform. I signed up for the 7-day trial, and honestly, I'm doing the super shitty thing. I had the 7-day trial with one email address, and I'm probably going to sign up for another one with a different email address. So I wanted to watch Console Wars, and I want to watch the Stand miniseries, the Stephen King thing that came out.
Yeah.
It finished airing like a month or so ago.
Yeah.
And it seems interesting, but I definitely am not, I'm not paying for a month of this shitty platform.
Yeah.
It's just like Peacock. Like, I will only pay the minimum for Peacock once all of AP Bio is available. And honestly, if AP Bio never airs again, I might never subscribe to it again. But yeah, CBS All Access, not good. Don't like it.
No.
Do not recommend. The movie, though, the Console Wars, was actually, it was really good. It's like a condensed version of the book, which the book was the history of Sega and Nintendo in the late 80s and early 90s,
mm-hmm.
as well as like a little more history, like going back into like the early 80s about like the Atari crash of the video game stuff, and like how Nintendo kind of had to like fight their way to like actually get the console on the market in the US in 85.
Yeah.
The book is actually really long and goes into a lot of detail. The movie does cut a lot of that out and just kind of hits on like the key points. The biggest difference is like the movie is definitely more of like a documentary. Like, it's just straight interviews with a lot of people that were there at the time, like Tom Kalinske and Bill White, and I can't think of anyone else's fucking name right now. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of the executives that were at Nintendo and Sega and in the later case Sony, were all interviewed and like were talking about it. And you could tell that like the Nintendo people are still kind of bitter about Sega, and the Sega people are still kind of bitter about Nintendo. And they all seem kind of bitter about Sony. So, but a lot of those people don't even work for those companies anymore, so it's really just, like, Kalinske left Sega, like, 2 years after the Saturn, or a year after the Saturn, because Sega just started doing a bunch of stupid shit that, like, they weren't listening to him on. So he's just like, yeah, fuck it. I'm done.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a 90-minute movie. If you're interested in like video game history stuff like that, it's worth signing up for the free trial and watching it.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't want to read like a 400-page book. I will say the book is better in this case, just because it does have a lot more detail and it's told more like narratively. Like, it's actually told as a story, just based on all of the interviews that Harris did with all of these people. So it's more like an oral history, I guess you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of like a side thing. I don't know if you guys saw this. Nintendo apparently has a concierge program going on right now.
No. Okay.
So it's free, and it's basically you can get a scheduled time to talk with somebody for like recommendations on Switch games, how to use your Switch, like stuff like that. it's geared towards new people, like people that are either new to Nintendo, new to video games in general. But IGN had an article up by Rebecca Valentine, one of their news editors. And like from what she was saying, like she set up an appointment when she got on with the person. Like she made it very clear that like it was for an article, and that like she knows what a fucking video game is already. And apparently the dude was still incredibly helpful and engaging and actually gave her recommendations of things that she hadn't ever tried. And like showed her like how to find the demos for those specific games so that they could be tried. And like ended up, I think, if I remember correctly, at the end of the article, like she bought at least one game that was recommended from it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's apparently only available through the end of February right now. It's a pilot program. But hopefully it works out and they bring it back, because that's actually a really cool thing to do. And it's kind of reminiscent of the old like Nintendo Power Hotline stuff, where like you'd had like the people that were supposed to be experts on games, and you could like call this 900 number and get like tips on how to do things in those games.
Yeah.
It was if you ever watched that High Score docu-series on Netflix, one of the episodes I think covers that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was neat.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know if any of us really care about this, but the Flash movie cast a Supergirl. I didn't know Supergirl was going to be in the Flash movie, but apparently.
Neither did I. Honestly, I'm waiting for the Snyder Cut to see how that is before I even decide if I really care about any more of the DCEU.
Well, so the Snyder Cut isn't going to tie into anything else. So this is kind of like off topic, but I saw two different reports that apparently executives at WB knew that Joss Whedon's version of the Snyder Cut was garbage, but put it out anyway. And they have no faith in the Snyder version of it either. They're just kind of doing it because he did it without getting paid.
Yeah, it's I liked Wonder Woman 84, but I haven't watched Shazam yet, but there, I don't know. I don't really care about the DCEU right now. It's just, it's too broken, and the fact that they're doing Flashpoint for the Flash movie this early into the system, like, it's just, it's not, I just don't care.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I'm still interested in, like, the Batman.
Yeah.
And Shazam, like, I really like Shazam. Like, I'm interested to see Shazam 2. Aquaman was fine. I don't know if I necessarily need another Aquaman, though.
Yeah.
And honestly, this Flash movie has been in such a development hell sort of thing for so many years that, like, I still don't fully believe it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's
also, like, you mentioned the Batman. The Batman isn't part of the DCEU right now, as far as I remember. Like, it's its
not
own
right now,
story.
But they're also using Flash as, like, a reboot for that universe to get rid of everything.
Yeah.
And just keep the pieces they like. So maybe it will be after this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they cast Supergirl. It's actress Sasha Calle. She's from I think it's like the Days of Our Lives or Bold and the Beautiful or something like that. I think I put it on here.
I looked her up just before we started talking about her, and that's really all the only credit she has. It's literally the only credit she has, unless she was like a model or something beforehand, which could be.
Apparently, she auditioned with Ezra Miller to, like, test chemistry, so they're definitely going to have scenes together. We don't know if it's going to be, like, a Kara Danvers, Kara Zor-El version, like we see in the CW show, or if it's going to be, like, a different version or iteration of Supergirl. And I forgot that they announced that there's going to be a Supergirl movie, too. So this is probably just them bringing the character in before their own movie, kind of like they did with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
WB is apparently also hoping to have similar success like they had with Wonder Woman, where Gal Gadot wasn't really like well known at that point. Like she'd been in three Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
But at that point, like those movies weren't even the crazy like big franchises they are now when she was cast for Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of hoping like a similar thing happens where a relatively unknown actress gets cast and like just excels in the role and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think this movie is ever going to happen,
no,
if I'm being honest.
It's also, apparently, and this kind of makes me not want to watch it, apparently Ezra Miller's kind of an asshole. And I love The Flash, and I love Barry Allen, and if you have an asshole casted as one of the nicest characters in the world. It's just going to ruin it for me.
So I've heard, like, it's not so much that he's an asshole as much as, like, he is apparently just super socially awkward and comes off very, like, off-putting to people. Because he just doesn't know how to interact with, like, strangers and fans and stuff like that. And apparently, like, can sometimes come off a little brash and, like, jerkish. But, like, isn't necessarily, like, a mean person. Yeah. I'm going to be super quick about this because you didn't watch it.
Yeah, we can talk about it more next week.
Yeah, Superman and Lois premiered. I actually thought it was really good. I get the intense feeling that it is not actually part of, like, Earth Prime in the Arrowverse, though. It's just the way that their kids are teenagers seems weird, even with, like, the whole reset from Crisis. Like, that seems weird. And there's just, I know it's just the first episode, but there's, like, no mention of, like, anything else that's been going on in the world. With all, like, because, like, there's a lot of heroes in this fucking world at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, though. It was definitely more family drama than, like, CW superhero show.
Yeah.
But, like, it was, like, good family drama as much as, like, a CW show could be. And I was at least, like, I was compelled to keep watching it.
Yeah.
Like, seeing, like, the brothers kind of, like, they're brothers and they're teenagers, so they hate each other, but they also, like, have each other's backs when they need to. Super confused why they named one of them Jordan. Like, one brother's named Jonathan. That is a comic book character. Like, that is Superman's son in the comics. Jordan does not exist in the comics. And I feel like they could have named him Connor instead and at least gotten the, like, fanboy happiness, because Connor Kent is a version of Superboy. He is a very popular version of Superboy. He is not the son of anybody. He is the, in current continuity, he's the genetic clone of Superman and Lex Luthor, because why the fuck not? But, you know, I feel like that would have been a better, like, call than, like, a random, like, Jordan. Just seems like a weird fucking choice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We've been spoiled with all the WandaVision references in comic book references in the show that, to me, it doesn't matter what they call these kids. They could have been called Kid 1 and 2, and if I enjoy the show, I'll watch it. I like, what they name the kids doesn't matter.
I know, it's just one of those, it's like, it's just weird, because most of these Arrowverse shows are pretty good about, like, grabbing characters from the existing, like, comic continuities. Even if they're, like, super minor characters that, like, Cat Grant in, like, the first season of Supergirl, pretty minor super, like Superman-centered character that, like, they kind of made a focal point of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, at one point, one of the kids is playing MK versus DC, which I thought was fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was playing, like, Raiden against Superman.
Okay.
I hope that, John Cryer's in it at some point, like, as Lex. Like, if this is part of, like, Arrowverse Prime, like, he's a really good Lex Luthor, and if Supergirl's ending, it would be nice if he shows up.
Yeah, we'll have to see what they did with Supergirl, though, because I thought he's not dead, but...
No, because he is in charge of everything now, because he used the fucking book in Crisis to rewrite his own destiny.
No, he's part of Leviathan now. He was, like, head of the company. He's now part of Leviathan, and, Brainy almost died, or did die, I can't remember.
No, he almost died, he didn't die.
So, who knows what Supergirl does, because he's a main focal point in that. They're not gonna combine. Until Supergirl's over, they're not gonna have the same villain for two different series.
Oh, that's what, I don't think that, that he'd be in, like, this season. I just mean, like, if this show goes on, which I think it already got picked up for a season two.
It did.
Because they just renewed everything. I mean, like, I hope that since Supergirl's ending, he continues on in Superman.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. When you do watch it, they drop a name, Morgan Edge, a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, the antagonist from season two or three. It was the guy that played Nathan on Heroes, Adrian Pazdar.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember him from Supergirl.
No, not right now.
Yeah. He was like the second, like, rich dude that was kind of a dickhead. It looks like they're recasting him, though, for this one. Which, again, makes me wonder if this is going to be set in a different universe. But we'll talk more about that next week when you've actually had a chance to watch it and I can say things without actually spoiling it.
Yeah.
Because he's not shown in that episode. I saw it online that it was a different actor.
Yeah.
But to wrap things up, as usual, you watched Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2.
Yes, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2. And I did a little bit of research post-watching this one because it was interesting. The movie itself and the kaiju fights and things like that were cool. It had Rodan in it who got superpowered and became Fire Rodan at one point. It was dumb. And also had Baby Godzilla, whose name is Baby. Cause they just did not name him. And they used, it was cool, the idea of how they made Mechagodzilla by taking the parts of Mechagodorah to make a Mechagodzilla, because Mechagodorah was futuristic parts, was like an interesting and neat little nod to that past, movie. But it was good. It was fine. The resolution was kind of pretty lame. Like, Godzilla ended up destroying Mechagodzilla and then going to Baby Godzilla and walking off into the water. That was it. That's how the movie ended. There was no, like, super climactic ending. It was just like, Baby Godzilla, you now come with me. But, like, the movie as a whole, in general, like, the whole storyline with it, it worked, and it was fine. I was more interested in this one than I was with, Mothra. But, like, I did some research after, and the reason they threw Baby Godzilla in it is because they wanted to keep the female interest in the, or not, yeah, like, they wanted to keep females more interested in the movie because they loved Mothra, because Mothra was so pretty, that they added a baby. Which I'm just like, that's kind of one of the most sexist things you could ever do. And
yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. And then,
but that, it's also Japan in the early 90s.
Yeah, it's, 93. And also, this was supposed to be the last movie in this era, because the rights had for Godzilla 98 have already been given to the United States, or had been sold. So they didn't want to, like, have competing Godzilla movies. So this was supposed to be their last one, and their original goal was to be a remake of Godzilla vs. King Kong. But they couldn't get the rights to King Kong, so then they were just going to have it be Godzilla vs. a robotic monkey. But the robotic giant monkey was still too close to King Kong, so they went with Mechagodzilla.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was originally supposed to be the final one, and then I guess they changed all of that, did Mechagodzilla, added Baby Godzilla, and got two more movies out of the franchise before Godzilla 98 comes out. But yeah, it was good. It was enjoyable. I'm making this one quick and tight, and because there's not really a lot of memorable things to talk about it. But it was just fine. Or not fine, it was good. And my next one, which I'm kind of looking forward to, is Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla, because Space Godzilla.
So is this like an actual Godzilla from space?
Yes, actually it is. It is considered a Godzilla. Like, somehow is a Godzillasaurus that went into space and got turned into Crystal Space Godzilla, I guess. I don't really know. I haven't read up into it, but people can, like, when you go through, like, the, quotes, evolution of Godzilla videos and things like that, that is part of Godzilla's evolution, is Space Godzilla.
That's weird, but okay.
Yeah. So that's the second to last one in the era, and then I have Destroya, and then, so 2 weeks, let's see. Yeah, 2 weeks from, or 3 weeks from now, I'll be watching Godzilla vs., or not Godzilla vs., Godzilla 98. I hate you, Cobb.
you're actually gonna watch it?
Yeah, and it's after Destroya, so it's Godzilla vs., Space Godzilla on this Saturday. And then on the 6th of March is Godzilla vs. Destroya, and then is Godzilla 98 on the 13th.
Good. Good job.
I hate you so much.
I guess that... I think that's a show, though.
Yeah, that's a show.
All right. If you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, you can go to your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, all those fun places. Subscribe to us, rate us, review us. Those things all help a whole lot. You can also find us on social media. We are facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo. And you can always send us an email to social@one-quest.com. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.